in recess.
Well, I'm gonna leave this here.
It's like I just walked in.
Your goal would be great, but...
Okay, today is Friday, April 20th. A quorum being present, the Committee on Local Government and Elections will come to order. The first bill on the agenda is Senate File 2599, Senator Metzen.
Thank you.
A few ground rules before we start, if we could. We're going to limit testimony to 2 minutes. If we could, no more than 2 minutes. We have the two bills before us and would like to give due time to each one. But we will be taking some public testimony on 2599. However, we've already taken public testimony on 2391. And we will not be hearing Senator Chamberlain's bill 2127 today. So with that, Senator Metzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for allowing us to testify this afternoon on Senate File 2599. This has given the state and the legislature a second option, and this is what we call the People's Stadium Bill in Arden Hills. Some of us feel that this is a place where it belongs. It will not only be a stadium site, but there's another 160 to 200 acres to be developed out there and increase the Ramsey County and the city's tax bases quite a bit. We have determined that this bill will cost the state $50 million less than the Minneapolis proposal, $350 to $400 million. It has a referenda in here. The suburban Ramsey County residents will be allowed to vote on a referendum to add 2% food and beverage tax to help with the needed $100 million road improvements in the region there. And these road improvements, obviously, in my opinion, have been needed for about 50, 60 years. It's obsolete loops out there. It's not only good for this region, but it's good for northern Minnesota and all points north where people go through this maze of roads. Ramsey County will be required to clean up 430 acres of the polluted land and donate 260 acres to the Stadium Authority. We feel this will get the job done in the shortest amount of time, return the land to Ramsey County's property tax base, clean up the Superfund site, and get needed transportation improvements in the area and create a lot of jobs. At that, I would like to turn now, because of the time limits here, to County Commissioner Rafael Ortega, who he and Commissioner Bennett have been working tirelessly on this project for a long time, so we'll let him make a few remarks to the committee.
Thank you, Commissioner Ortega. Welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the tape, please?
Rafael Ortega, Ramsey County Commissioner, District 5. I am not going to repeat much of what Senator Metzen has stated because I do want to leave time for Lee Merkins, our finance director, to answer any questions you have regarding the financing. I will say that I joined Commissioner Bennett 2 years ago as he has been working on this TCAP for quite a few years, trying to bring economic development to the area. He represents the area. As it has been stated, our proposal is $50 million less to the state. It creates more jobs than any other site, and it puts property back on the tax rolls, roughly 170 acres, instead of taking taxes from property off the tax rolls. I know that there have been some rumors that this is not supported by the city of Arden Hills, but I just want to quickly give you a quick list of where we have support, and then I will turn it over to Lee Merkins, our finance director. We have received support resolutions from the city of Arden Hills, Chisago County, the city of Blaine, Norfolk, New Brighton, Moundsview, Little Canada, Venice Heights, Shoreview, the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce, the North Suburban Chamber of Commerce, the Roseville Visitors and Business Bureau, and the White Bear Chamber of Commerce. I could keep talking about this site since I've been working on it for a year and a half in the proposal, but I really prefer to have the committee have any questions regarding the financing directed to our finance director, Mr. Lee Merkins.
Introduce Mr. Merkins, the finance director from Ramsey County.
Mr. Merkins, welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the tape?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, I'm Lee Merkins. I'm the Ramsey County Finance Director. I would provide a couple of transitional points before I jump into the numbers. We do believe that this is the better site. This is a site, 430 acres, the TCAP site will allow 260 acres for the stadium itself, which will provide more space for the stadium, allow a larger stadium facility to be constructed, provide space for 21,000 parking spaces to allow for tailgating. State costs will be less, as mentioned, approximately $50 million less at the Arden Hills proposal than with the Metrodome site. State contribution for this particular proposal would be $350 million as opposed to $398 million required for the Metrodome site. We also believe that this safeguards the state's financial interests better. It has a referendum requirement as opposed to trying to skirt local referendum requirements. We feel that that's a benefit. $8 million a year beginning in 2013 would be available by the imposition of a 2% suburban Ramsey County food and beverage tax. That funding would be available upon successful approval by a voter referendum this fall. That funding would be available in 2013. A real benefit of that is by having that funding available in 2013 rather than waiting for convention center bonds to be paid off in 2020, the funding is available immediately to offset state debt service costs. We think that's a benefit. It avoids the Target Center XL Arena conundrum by not creating a competitive disadvantage for those two facilities. The development of the site would add $232 million at full development, would add $232 million of additional market value on that 170 acres of private development area on the TCAP site, which would generate about $7 million a year in local property taxes. It fixes the largest Superfund site in the state of Minnesota by remediating and cleaning that site, something that we feel is, you know, critically important in Ramsey County. And it also fixes the transportation problem. It provides $101 million of transportation funding as part of project costs that would improve, add lanes to the Interstate 35W area, the 694 interchange. 212,000 cars go through that area each day. So people that don't even go to the stadium would benefit significantly by improving the transportation flow in that area, which oftentimes resembles more of a parking lot than an interstate highway. In terms of the numbers, Mr. Chair and members, the overall project cost for the Arden Hills proposal would be $1.1 billion. The financing of that would occur as follows: $425 million paid by the team, $350 million as a state contribution, $300 million from county revenues, and $36 million from other funding sources. All of those sources adding to the $1.1 billion. That includes funding for the stadium. That includes funding for $101 million in transportation improvements. And that includes funding for the acquisition and cleanup remediation of the TCAP site. In terms of how it's financed, in a nutshell, there's a number of different financing sources, but in broad strokes, there are two major categories. One is a slate of user fee, user financing revenues that would pay for about half of the county contribution share. The other half would be provided by the 2% tax on food, beverage, and liquor sales in suburban Ramsey County that would be subject to the referendum requirement. So that, in broad strokes, is the financing plan for the Arden Hills Ramsey County proposal.
Any questions from members?
You know, for the state part.
Mm-hmm. I might add, Mr. Chairman, members, that
Senator Mattson.
I think that the lawful gambling Article 5, the state's portion would be, I believe, almost identical to the other bill. So that would be the electronic pull tabs and that. So that's where our state put would come from.
Okay, we have Tom Pritchard. Are you?
Mr. Chair, can I have a question?
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question about the, you know, the revenue stream, and you outlined the portions of 425 for the team, 350 million for the state, and 300 for the county. If and the county revenue, as I understand it, is going to be from the sales tax that would be only adopted by a referendum. What if that sales tax? This is a hotel, motel, entertainment tax, as I understand. What if that did not produce the revenue that you're thinking it would? What if it didn't produce $300 million? Then what would pay for the balance of that?
Mr. Merkins.
Ms. Chair, Senator, the analysis that we had done on the suburban food and beverage tax was done by Springstead and Associates Financial Advisors to Ramsey County. We feel very confident in the numbers that are provided in that particular estimate, perhaps on the conservative side. We're estimating 2% growth on a year-to-year basis, which we think is fairly conservative as well. That would provide some amount of flexibility there. We're aware that the legislature is going to need to address backup funding sources for all of these various revenue sources, and we're sort of yielding to the legislature to decide what those backup sources need to be. In terms of the construction of the bill, I would say this, Senator, that members should understand that the bill originally started as as the Metrodome proposal from Senator Rosen. And most of the language that you see in the bill uses that as a baseline. Then it was amended to incorporate what at the time was a 100% user finance proposal from Ramsey County. So there were some changes made that were incorporated. This particular proposal of Senator Mattson and others at this time then would evolve it one step further to add the proposed 2% suburban food and beverage tax. It's not a sales tax, it's strictly food and beverage. And the discussion that you have about backups, I think is germane whether you're talking about this bill or whether you're talking about other bills as well.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I might understand that that same answer might be for the state portion of it, if the 350 and I guess these are electronic pull tabs. If that didn't create that, we're going to have a backup plan for the state portion of it also. And then I guess I'm going to ask, what's our backup plan? Senator Mattson, what would be the backup plan for either of these funding sources?
Senator Mattson.
Yeah, all the numbers I've given and looked at, that's a legitimate question. I think we can get there with this, so... I guess I don't have an answer for you this afternoon, but we would try to make sure at the end of the day that certainly none of these bills, as far as I know, have a general taxation.
Yeah.
I would not be for that ever if we needed a backup. So I think when we get to that street, we'd have to figure out another 0.5% on the sales tax on the food and beverage or something like that. But I commit to you and people that are watching here that it will not be general taxation dollars to our people. So it would be an additional like user's tax or an additional 0.25% food and beverage or something. But it's not going to go to the property taxes and or the general taxes if this should occur in the future. You've got my word on that, and I'm glad you asked the question.
Commissioner Ortega, did you have a comment?
Real quick. I understand that that's been part of the discussion. A little bit foreign to us, Mr. Chair and Senator. If I look at the last 12 years of all the capital projects we have run, and we have used Springstead, including the Union Depot, we are including the Union Depot on the budget and ahead of schedule. And the Union Depot is a $200 million project. I guess our history is, because we've played it conservatively with all our projects, we are very comfortable. Our numbers are very hard. We really lean to the conservative side in terms of the numbers in every way. Doesn't mean that your question is invalid, but our history speaks for itself.
One more comment. One more comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the proposal to develop the TCAP property. I just want to be on record saying that this is a property that we do want to get developed in Ramsey County, and so I appreciate efforts to look at that property. I am concerned about some of the funding mechanisms here in this bill and a backup plan. You know, I do not, you know, we just can't have this falling to the general taxpayer, and so I do have some concerns there, but thank you.
Mr. Merkins.
Mr. Chair, Senators, maybe expanding on the notion beyond just the revenue sources, but also to talk about the capital cost side, I think some other points that we would make in comparing and contrasting this particular proposal to the Metrodome proposal, we feel that this reduces the public financial risk in a couple different areas as well. This particular proposal would require the team to pay for all operating costs of the stadium facility. That's as opposed to the Metrodome proposal, where they would only pay a portion of the operating costs for that particular proposal. Our proposal will suggest that the Vikings need to cover the capital cost overruns, if there are any, on the project. The Metrodome proposal, I believe, would put that responsibility on the Stadium Authority, which we think adds a level of risk to that public body. So those are also some public risk elements that I wanted to bring to your attention.
Thank you.
Okay, we had Mr. Pritchard wanted to testify.
You want another chair?
I don't know that we. Mr. Pritchard, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Tom Pritchard. I'm president of the Minnesota Family Council. And I want to speak in opposition not to the issue of building a stadium. We're not taking a position on that. But we strongly oppose the use of expanding gambling to pay for it with the state share. I think it's important to take a closer look at the proposed funding source for the state share, an expansion of electronic video gambling, the most addictive form of gambling, and its impact on state governments, local government, and our state as a whole. This is a massive expansion of the most addictive form of gambling, video or electronic gambling. They're estimating that it will result in an additional $1.5 billion in gambling receipts. They're talking about placing between 25,000 and 30,000 new electronic gambling machines and 2,500 to 3,000 bars and restaurants across the state. This expansion of gambling will literally blanket the state. Why is this problematic? Because video and electronic gambling is the most addictive form of gambling. The high from video gambling is comparable to the high from crack cocaine. This bill will in effect, target problem or addicted gamblers. Why? Because that's where the money is. Studies of video gambling casinos find that one-third to a half of the revenues from video slots comes from 1% of the gamblers. Without attracting or finding new compulsive gamblers, video gambling won't result in the projected revenues necessary to fund the state's share of the stadium cost. Why should we care? Because the estimated 1% of Minnesotans who are vulnerable to compulsive gambling, that's over 50,000 people in Minnesota. Those people have families, friends, and workplaces that will be impacted by their gambling problems. The resulting broken families, crime, and social problems may well touch us directly, but will certainly touch us indirectly when there's a demand for greater government services at all levels of government. This means higher taxes. In conclusion, please consider the implications of blanketing the state with electronic or video gambling. It will actually cost us more than the additional dollars we hope to get out of $1.5 billion in new gambling spending. I urge you not to pay for a stadium by dramatically expanding predatory gambling in Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you very much. Mr. Hartwig?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for letting me testify today. I have a number
of
issues.
Could you state your name, please, for the record?
Yes. The name is John Hartwig. I'm from Minneapolis.
Thank you. Proceed.
I have a number of issues. First of all, last Monday and also this evening, this afternoon, people have mentioned a people's stadium. I believe that anybody with an education beyond the eighth grade realizes that crimes have been committed in the name of people than in the name of God. I'll give you two examples, Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia. Now, to the issue at hand. Our present stadium in Minneapolis, I believe, is nothing more than a fire hazard. If you get a fire up on the roof, that place is going to be burned faster than the Hindenburg did in 1937. As to a new stadium and how we're going to be able to pay for it, I believe the governor has the means for us to fund a stadium with no taxes or no obligation as far as the people are concerned. And the way he can do that, one of his many wives was a Rockefeller. And what I would suggest is that the governor get on the horn, talk to his wife. I believe there's $20 or $30 billion in the Rockefeller Fund, and maybe his ex would be able to send maybe $4 or $5 billion our way. In other words, what we would be looking for is not only a stadium that would last for 30 years, but like the ancient Romans, we would have a stadium that lasts for 2,000 years. But, of course, that's going to be expensive. We would have silver items as far as the in the bathroom and also gold toilet seats. But in any event, that's another issue if the governor wants to take that up. The third thing and final problem here is that the governor, Mr. Mondale, and Rybeck, they've put a lot of pressure on the people in Minnesota for this new stadium. Now, there's such a thing as persuasion. There's such a thing as persuasion and the, excuse me.
If you could wrap up.
Sure. Persuasion, coercion, and extortion. I believe that the gentlemen involved here are very close to being accused of extortion as far as this stadium issue is concerned. And as we all know, there's a conflict between the states and the federal government. And we all know what the federal government did to the governor of Illinois. He's in a federal prison. And so I would recommend those three gentlemen pull back a little bit, or we're going to have some people maybe doing some hard time at Leavenworth or at Supermax in California, in Colorado. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Mark Ryan and Joe Ott, O-T-T-E. Ott.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and the members of the committee. I'm Mark Ryan, president and co-owner of Carl Bolander & Sons and SKB Environmental. In partnership with Wink Associates, Carl Bolander & Son won the competitive bid to to perform the environmental cleanup work at Arden Hills TCAP site for Ramsey County. We support the Arden Hills bill. This project is shovel-ready. We can start digging and putting equipment operators, laborers, truck drivers, engineers, and soil testing companies back to work within days of the bill being signed into law. As you know, jobs in the construction industry as a whole have been hit very hard with unemployment. The Arden Hills project is unique because a lot of the preliminary steps have been taken, so it will get people to work immediately. There are many environmental benefits of cleaning up the site. It will get 430 acres of contaminated land cleaned up. So in addition to cleaning up our land and groundwater resources, it will also get this property, which is ideal for economic development, back into use to generate jobs, opportunity, and revenue. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but mainly just wanted to testify in support of the Arden Hills bill and the immediate impact it can have on job creation and economic growth in our industry and community. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Ryan? Seeing none, thank you. Joe Otto.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Joe Otte. I'm an environmental consultant with Wenk Associates. Together with Bolander, we have put a not-to-exceed number on cleaning up this property. I was formerly the supervisor of the Voluntary Investigation and Cleanup Program at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. For over 22 years, I've been actively engaged in redevelopment activities at environmentally impacted properties. The Twin City Army Ammunition Plant site has undergone incredible scrutiny since the beginning of the 1980s. While several soil problems still remain, the biggest redevelopment obstacle is the presence of all the dilapidated structures and residual infrastructure from the former facility operations. The cost to clearing these buildings and related structures is about $13 million, a number that's far too big for any private sector developer to undertake. Another huge obstacle with a site like this is the lack of existing traffic infrastructure to serve the property. There's really no way a private sector development could make an opportunity site like this come together in the way that a huge stadium could. The stadium is the perfect opportunity to create a critical spark to stimulate an avalanche of development in this area. It'll go from being a non-performing asset to being a major source of beneficial economic activity. The property's languished for far too long, and with the legislature's assistance, it's our belief that this project will demonstrate the ability of this region to succeed at redeveloping its brownfield sites. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Senator Metzen, did you have any other witnesses?
I just would hope that this bill could move forward. I'm for a stadium, and I prefer this site, but I do want to see that the Vikings soda. So I would hope that this bill could. Well, Mr. Chairman, members, it's got a couple more stops to take, be filtered out, go forward. But I would hope that to keep this site in play. Section 16. Let me read for a moment. I'm sure you're all aware of it, but subdivision 3 requires the authority to work to maximize access for public and amateur sports community. Civic events and other public events similar to those being held in a metropolitan sense. It's much, much more stadium built. So I think you all knew that, but I thought I better mention this will be used, I don't know how many days, but a lot. So hopefully we can move this one forward and see where the chips may fall.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Metzen, I see that there are several other sources of funding that I don't think we've talked about. One of them, you have commemorative bricks that people may buy. It doesn't indicate what the charge would be or how much revenue might be expected. And then on Section 21, which is on page 8 in the summary, it talks about imposing a 3% surcharge on the sales of tickets and admissions to NFL team games, and then a 3% food, beverage, liquor, and lodging tax for all sales occurring within the stadium and the development area. I'm just wondering what the development area would be defined as. And then there's another one that provides that the surcharge, well, that those are the main things. The rest is about where the money would be placed. But I'm wondering, is that for operations? Although I think your proposal says that the operating costs are paid by the team. So where would this money go?
Mr. Merkins,
who has the details deeper than I do, to answer that.
Ms. Chairman, Senator, I'll try to respond to those pieces in turn. First of all, I'd say on the gaming, just a quick point to clarify the county's position. We have recognized from the beginning in the discussions with the team and with the state that this needs to be, if it is to be successful, it needs to be a three-party agreement with the Vikings, with the county, with the state. The bill has the gaming revenues in it at this time. Those are not Ramsey County proposed state, it's not a Ramsey County proposed state financing plan. We don't want to be accused of overreaching and telling the state how we think you should finance your share of the stadium. But that is our understanding of what state negotiators have been kind of directing towards. So that's why the gaming is in the bill. Specifically to your question about those sources, when I started my overview, I mentioned that about half of the $21 million a year on average that could be generated in county revenues to offset state debt service costs, about half of that would come from user fees, user financing, user-generated revenues on the site, the other half from the 2% food and beverage tax. The questions that you have are on some of those user fees, user revenues. The 3% admission surcharge is part of the user fee proposal. It would generate, in 2016 at stadium opening, it would generate about $1.6 million per year, and that would be from a 3% ticket tax placed on the NFL game day tickets. That compares to a 10% ticket tax at the Dome. That money would be available to the state, and that would help offset some of the debt service costs. The hospitality taxes, you touched on them. In addition to a suburban-wide 2% food and beverage tax that would be subject to the referenda, this proposal also suggests for the TCAP property, for the TCAP site only, a suite of hospitality taxes that mirror what is in place in downtown Minneapolis. 3% food and beverage, 3% lodging. Those would also be made available to the state to offset the state debt service costs. Those would raise about $2 million in 2016. So that's sort of the revenue sources involved. In terms of the span of that, those particular hospitality taxes, food and beverage, lodging, would only be on the 430 acres for the TCAP site, which would include the 260 acres for the stadium and the 170 acres for the development area, which is the private development area adjacent to the stadium development site.
Thank you.
Okay. Any additional questions? Senator Chamberlain, did you have a question? Or?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Ortega and Senator Metzen, I think there are a lot of things about this particular offer that get us much closer to a deal that I think is much more acceptable, in my humble opinion. Beyond that, I was looking at the comparison here. As far as this committee's jurisdiction, SAC charges in the other bill, there's some exemption for it. Are you any exemptions or exclusions for SAC fees on your site or anything else of that nature?
That's SAC.
Ms. Merkin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I believe this bill does have an exemption for SAC charges.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? I'd like to point out Senator Senjum, Majority Leader, has joined us, and Representative Mahoney is here, and Senator Bonhoff is here. So.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 39, there's talk of a state commercial industrial tax levy, and on page 40, there is a in state sales. Tax committee, but I would like to visit this issue a little bit. I know on line 39.33, the for 2012, the base amount of the state general levy will be $0 for the stadium and development area. I'm assuming that's during the construction phase. That's why there is no tax imposed at that time. Could you explain that?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator, the reason for the calculation of zero being the amount of money raised in the statewide business tax at that time is because the site is undeveloped right now. There is no economic activity on the site. There's no market value, hence there's no statewide business tax applied to it. So that would be the baseline.
And Mr. Chair and sir, if I could bring you to page 40. As we look at the first four lines on page 40, we talk of the tax payable in subsequent years will begin in 2013. Will the construction be done before 2013?
Mr. Merkin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, as I mentioned, there's been an evolution in this bill. Again, it started off as a Ramsey County proposal for 100% user financing, now has evolved into a proposal that has the 2% food and beverage applied to it. At the time that the original Ramsey County bill was proposed, there was a thought at that time the stadium would be open and operational by 2015. That deadline has come and gone. We assume that the stadium at this time would be open in 2016, not 2015.
And Mr. Chair,
yes, Senator Lemmer,
if I can bring you down to Section 6 on lines 12 through 20 on page 40, we talk of a sales tax, state sales tax growth, and it this language would authorize the Commissioner of Revenue to determine the amount of the state general sales tax paid at the Arden Hill Stadium. That would be on tickets, concessions, and other transactions, but do we normally do this? We allow a commissioner of revenue to determine the tax rate. Isn't that the job of the legislature?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, maybe if I could clarify what that proposal is and how it would work. That particular portion speaks to capturing the growth in the existing state sales tax without any changes whatsoever, capturing the growth in that state sales tax on the TCAP site that's attributable to the extra economic activity that occurs on the site. Doesn't change the state tax rate, same state tax rate. It just recognizes that there'll be additional economic activity on the site that will generate additional state sales tax, and it books that addition, if you will, for a revenue stream that would offset the state debt service costs.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Lemmer.
So perhaps I misstated it by saying tax rate. I see that it's the commissioner will determine the amount of state general sales tax paid at the stadium. Could you ever foresee that this rate of taxation would be higher than the general sales tax rate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's not our intent. The proposal incorporates additional hospitality taxes being blinked on as user financing revenues on the TCAP site. Specifically, I talked about those earlier, food and beverage, lodging, but does not anticipate any additional sales taxes. This is not a camel's nose under the tent to change the state sales tax rate. It just mainly books the additional revenues attributable to this particular stadium development that are driven from the site.
Mr. Chair, what would be additional? Could you tell me what would be additional?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the expectations on the sales tax growth would come from a couple different places. The state sales tax, the standard state sales tax rate would apply to the tickets, but the ticket price is going to go up. That would generate additional state sales tax on tickets. There's additional concession revenues, parking revenues, whatever is generated at that site that has the state sales tax rate on it now, by virtue of the additional economic activity, would generate those revenues.
One last question, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if you've been following other legislation coming through. We're talking a lot these days about e-ticketing provisions, the competition of secondary markets on tickets. Would this tax be focused just on the primary ticket sale, or in the event that the tickets would go from, let's say, primary ticket price might be $20, but we have seen, at least in certain venues, where a $20 ticket within a day of being offered for public sale is scooped up by electronic means, and then they put those people create a secondary market and they sell the ticket for 400% more than the $20 price. Would the sales tax be on the primary ticket price, or would it, could it be attached to the secondary price?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the estimate is based on the standard current law vanilla approach with sale of the tickets. It doesn't factor in any additional nuances in terms of electronic resale. We're not trying to get fancy with these estimates. We just want to establish a good, solid, conservative baseline of saying, in the current Metrodome right now, the Vikings tickets face value is such and such amount. In the new Viking Stadium proposal, whether it's at the Metrodome or whether it's in Arden Hills, the face value is going to be higher. Under the current state sales tax rate and rules, it's going to generate more revenue.
Okay, thank you. Any additional questions? Senator Robley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just reading the section about the parking revenue, and it's my understanding that the authority would receive all net parking revenue from all events at the site. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm glad you brought that up. Again, the evolution of the bill as it's evolved. In the Ramsey County proposal, 100% user financing proposal, as part of that proposal at that time, those parking revenues would have gone to the authority. The parking revenues, naming rights associated with the parking lot itself, would have gone to the authority. This particular language is a carry forward of that, but the proposal, as I understand it from the senator, with the food and beverage tax applied to it, those revenues would no longer go to the stadium authority, are no longer part of this proposal. Those are things that could be taken out of the bill at a later time. They would go to the team, Senator, rather than to the authority.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Robing.
Would that be for all events at the facility or just the game day events?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that would be for game day events. The parking that's generated for public events would go to the stadium authority, as would the ticket revenues associated with those public events as well. We'll go to the authority, not the team.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Chamberlain touched on this, but the SAC fees that are in this bill, I think I would like to move to take that exemption out. I've been told by the metropolitan cities that this is a problem for the cities to set this sort of precedent that we would be waiving the sewer availability charge for the stadium. And so I think if council could help, I think I found it on lines 1226 to 1228. If an amendment's in order, I'd like to help moving that amendment.
Stengel, can you help us with that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sieben, you would move to delete everything, on page 12, line 26, delete everything after the period, and on page 12, delete lines 27 and 28.
Members have that. So that, any questions or discussion to the amendment?
Just to say, Mr. Chairman, I believe that's in the Minneapolis language also. So.
Thank you. Okay, all those in favor of the oral amendments, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Okay, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion. Anyone else care to testify for or against?
Mr. Chair.
2599. Yes.
One last question. It seems like a number of these proposals are relying on the expansion of gambling, state-sponsored gambling. And I'm just wondering, Senator Metzen, how many more outlets of gambling would be required in order to make this a viable cash flow for the project here?
Senator Metzen.
I didn't come up with these numbers. The industry did, and I guess I have to accept them. They're not my numbers, by the way. So, and I think the other bills that have been coming forward on this issue have had the same revenue stream in there, Senator. And I trust the industry that provided the numbers. And
well, Mr. Chair, perhaps someone from the industry could tell me: are we going to see a net increase in gambling outlets across the state of Minnesota in order to finance a stadium, or is it going to be about the same? What should we expect?
I think Mr. Barrett's braving to come forward here.
I had him on deck ready to go.
How are you?
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the tape, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members. Tom Barrett. I'm the director of the Gambling Control Board. Pleasure to be here and pleasure to step in and some of the clarity. In regards to the number of sites, and a part of the plan was to be available with the next bill as well, but electronic gaming, this isn't the first time it's been put before the legislature. And if you allow me just a brief background, it was actually proposed back starting in 2009, and it came from the charities after a study was done to say what can be done with the industry. And so it actually came at that time and has been developing for a number of years. This is the first year it's really got some serious attention. To the point of how we came up with the numbers, but more specifically to your question, what the board did was strictly look at the number of sites currently conducting charitable gambling in Minnesota. Currently there's 2,800 licensed sites doing charitable gambling right now. So we used that as a base. We did not project any increase in sites. Could new sites come on? Could we see some of the old veterans posts that did away with their gambling license come back on? That could happen. But for purposes of running the estimates for the revenue projections, we went with what we knew, and that is currently 2,800, currently licensed. But when we crafted the model, we said, well, maybe not every site is going to step into the electronic gaming format. And so we dialed that back to a number of 2,500. Long story around, but it's hopefully important to know the background where it came from. But to the expansion, right now the revenue estimates are based on 2,500 existing gambling sites using that as an option for their format.
And, Mr. Chair, one other question. Senator Metzen, after a stadium is paid off, what happens to the gambling revenue sites that are now in existence to pay off the stadium? The stadium purpose is now done. Where does that money go? Does it stop with?
You might be around then. I don't know. It's a 30-year bond, so I don't know. Maybe we could use it for education or maybe general fund money, and then let the legislature do what they deem the appropriate use of that money. But I think it'll take a while to maybe retire the bond, so we'll let the next generation figure that one out, Senator.
I think I had another question for Mr. Barrett, if he wouldn't mind. And maybe you don't have this information on you. I thought I saw some numbers that showed that charitable gambling had declined about almost 100% or about 50% from the last previous decade, and that the projected increase in gambling under these bills is approximately 250%. Do I get the picture on that?
Mr. Chair, close but not exact.
Okay.
Back in the high point with charitable gambling, back in, I believe it was 2004, it was a $1.4 billion gross sales industry, number one in the country. Other things have happened since that time. The primary factor was when they passed the smoking ban. We saw a significant decrease. Current gross receipts for the recently completed fiscal year, June 30th, was just over $1 billion. So from the period of 2004 to 2011, dropped about, my math is correct, about $400 million annually per year in gross receipts.
OK. And in order to do this, pull this off, how much would it have to increase? Or?
Well, with our projections, Mr. Chair, based on the new format, taking into account a 20% estimated decrease in paper sales, would generate an additional $1.3 billion in gross, or a net of $191 million.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Senator Harrington.
Did you have a question? Sure, thank you. I'll direct this question to Commissioner Ortega. I'm interested in how many jobs that this proposal will potentially create, both in terms of the construction time and then also in terms of ongoing jobs after the construction is completed.
Commissioner Ortega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Harrington, we've had various proposals, and this goes in stages, the cleanup being one, the construction being another, and then, of course, the private development of the 170 acres. If my memory recalls me, we're talking in our project in the neighborhood of 5,000 to 6,000 jobs.
Is that during construction or is that overall?
Well, that's what I mean. That would be, I'm talking about those phases of construction. There'll be the cleanup of the property, the construction of the stadium, and then the development of the 170 acres.
Follow-up question?
Senator Harrington.
Commissioner Ortega, is there any provision been built in for new hires and especially for working with women and minority contractors on the project?
Well, Commissioner Ortega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Harrington, from a Ramsey County perspective, and this is not just Ramsey County, of course, it affects the entire state. But our workforce solution has been preparing and working along with other folks. Of course, we have folks that are in various of our social services programs. I mean, we're looking at the ability and we're training folks, anticipating these developments. The stadium not being the only one. We have several other projects we're looking at currently now, like the West Building that we're planning to knock down and redevelop on the riverfront. And we're almost empty with that building. We only got about 200 employees left. We're planning to knock it down at the end of this year, tear it down. So we are constantly trying, creating jobs. We have been doing that in the last 4 years. We've had five major projects, including two libraries, including the Roseville Library. So employment is very significant to us in our county because of our demographics, because, quite frankly, we have some of the constituents are those that are most high unemployment. We have areas of high unemployment. So it is a constant goal and target in our mind. And we decided as a board that we need to not only sit by and provide social services, but we need to do more in terms of economic development, in terms of creating jobs. Every crane in St. Paul in the last 3 years has been a Ramsey County crane.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion, Mr. Merkin?
Maybe, Mr. Chair, Senator, to expand on the commissioner's comments, the bill as proposed does have a statement in it that does suggest that we give due deference to disadvantaged businesses as part of the construction of the stadium. In terms of the jobs created on the site, I think the latest estimates we were thinking was somewhere in the vicinity of 7,500 construction jobs, maybe another 3,400 ongoing operating jobs once the facility is built. And we feel that this particular proposal has potential for creating even more jobs than the Metrodome proposal by virtue of the fact that this proposal has $101 million of transportation improvements associated with it, paid for by it, which could employ another 600, 700 workers associated with those transportation improvement projects, and then plus whatever number of private sector jobs could be created in the development of the 170-acre ancillary development next to it. So we think that this is an enhanced job development bill.
Okay. Senator Roblin, did you have another question?
Thank you. I just wanted to ask about the Minnesota Stadium Authority in the bill. I'm assuming that this would be comparable to the Metropolitan Sports Authority that oversees the HHH Dome right now. Is that accurate?
Ms. Chairman, Senator, I don't think they're exactly a parallel image. I'm not familiar necessarily with the Metrodome proposal, but what I will say is that what this proposal endorses is certainly a stadium authority to be formed is parallel. This particular proposal would suggest a five-member authority. Governor would appoint the chair. Governor would appoint one more member. And then there would be two representatives appointed by Ramsey County and one representative appointed by the city of Arden Hills to round out the five.
Senator Reiner, and then we'll
pass.
Okay. Anyone else care to testify for or against this bill? I think what we're going to do, Senator Metzen, is we do have a couple issues with this, and what we'd like to do is lay it over. That's okay. So the chair will lay over Senate File 2599.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Are you meeting again or what? We don't want to, I don't want to see this bill and or the other one go to the graveyard. So I would ask for your intentions if we lay it over.
Well, if members have some questions, so we could vote on it, but I wouldn't recommend it at this time. I think it would be best to.
We might lay it over, Mr. Chairman, for the this duration of this committee and or
the duration of this committee and possibly allow you some time to do some work with some members maybe, or I would suggest.
Oh, maybe my count isn't that good.
I think you're getting the picture, Senator.
I don't know.
And I mean, your proposal has a lot of merit to it, and I would like to see it continue.
So.
Mr. Chair?
So.
Yes.
Out of curiosity, where are we moving these bills to? It has to get, I'm just wondering if keeping alive for the next committee is reasonable so that the two can go hand in hand to the next committee and I'm not sure what the
Senator Kielis, the prognosis looks a little better for the next one.
Great.
If I could.
Okay.
What I'm told.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzen. Mm.
This is I would guess a couple more stops on the way to the dance, and I would not like to see this derailed. I think probably has to go to Jobs Committee, Tax Committee. I don't know what committee's forward, but I don't want to leave here and not have this pretty good proposal not in the mix.
The concern, Senator Metzen, is that you not leave here at all.
Mm-hmm. What?
The concern is that you not leave here at all for the bill not. I think
I don't understand that. But
the count, your count, I think it doesn't look. If one of the members really wants to make the motion, they could, but I would hate to see this get derailed at this point. When there's one with a little more work, it might have some potential. And if I'm given the opportunity, I would
take that, Mr. Chairman, as a positive note, I guess. And
it is from me, Senator.
I'm sorry if I
especially the
anxious, but it sounds like you're.
No, I like the location. There's some methodology issues.
All right.
I can't control every vote on the committee either. So,
I believe that's fair, and I think we've had a good hearing. So, again, I hope that we can advance this proposal. Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair?
The bill is laid over. Yes.
You kind of jumped on that a little bit. Mr. Chair, I was just going to see if we couldn't make a motion to move it on without recommendation so that it has an opportunity to just be heard.
I would tell you.
Okay.
The math doesn't look.
Okay. just to try to keep it alive for a while, but
I appreciate that. I mean, you could. I'm just.
Chairman, maybe at the end of the day, that might be acceptable. Well, it would be acceptable to me to. Without a recommendation, just to keep it alive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for coming.
So did he accept that?
Okay. The next bill on the agenda is Senate File 2391. Senator Rosen, welcome back to the committee. There is an amendment here, the A-17. Would you like to address that at this time? Or?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for bringing this back forward. The A-17 amendment.
Or
with the amendment.
Did we lay it over?
Two copies here.
Where are we?
Two of the CE ones. I'm wondering if you've got one.
Okay, I think we have to take the bill off the table is what I'm told. So,
so moved.
Senator Reiner moves that Senate File 2391 is taken off the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The bill is before us. And I understand we have the CE1.
That's what we're doing. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, we're working from the CE1. Okay, this A-17 amendment before us, Senator Rosen, to your Senator Reiner moves the A-17 amendment.
So moved.
Thank you. To your amendment.
We don't have a copy of the amendment.
We'll get you one. Senator, your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I did have an opportunity to work with Senator Reinhart on this, and it is an acceptable amendment.
Mr. Chair, I think we want to be clear. The A-17 looks like it's a A-17 is not mine.
It's an author. I believe it's an author's amendment, is what I'm told. Is it?
I think it's yours.
Oh, it's mine.
Mine will be the A-12 next.
Where's this?
Oh, yeah. Isn't somebody? That makes more sense.
Mr. Chair, can we deal with this amendment? And I'm not sure where this is from. Is this from council? I'm not sure what's.
Yeah, we don't. You don't want us to take this up? We don't.
Well,
need to.
I probably need to further. My apologies, Senator Reiner.
Senator Reiner, would you like to withdraw your amendment?
That's not mine. Well, I did move it, so if the sure.
You got credit for it.
All right, we'll withdraw the A-17. Could I offer the A-12 instead?
Mr. Chair,
are we ready for it?
Just for point of clarification, did we need to move the CE-1 amendment first? Are we?
Mr. Chairman,
where are we on
Mr.
that?
Mr. Chairman. I got it.
I'm told we took it off the table, so we don't need to move it. The CE1 is not an amendment. That's an engrossment, I guess.
Okay, right. I'm sorry. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Are we ready? Do we want to start taking amendments, or did we want to get a summary?
How about if she goes through the bill first?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen, would you like to do?
If I could just do a little briefing before we go ahead, and
sure.
there is just one little change, Senator Reinhart, to your amendment that we need to talk about. But first, just to bring everybody back to the same page, and I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for bringing this bill forward. I do really appreciate this. I'd like to thank the, of course, the Vikings for being a willing partner, the city of Minneapolis, and for the governor for his leadership on this. I think this is a very good, doable bill for the state of Minnesota. This was not developed by a couple people. This was developed by a working group, a bipartisan working group, and we worked for long time, over a year on this. And it's it's still got a lot of work to go. We realize that. I just would like to say that there is a survey in your pile, and it's from the Mason-Dixon Polling and Research Incorporated. It's from, I believe, the Chamber put this out. And it talks about one of the The second question is based on this information, would you support or oppose a stadium financing proposal that used gambling and existing revenues along with a major contribution by the Vikings? 61.4% support that. So if you have a chance, members, if you could just take a look at that. Also, I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you'd like me to go briefly through the financial commitments and some of the funding sources, but I do know that there are some amendments, and we can go back and rehash a little bit of the bill, or if you'd just like to move forward, that's fine with me, too.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Okay, further discussion. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have some questions, as I thought this bill was moving through, and as we'd heard at our last hearing, you know, our concerns about, you know, in our metropolitan area and our entire state, pitting one center against another, and I noticed that the Target Center is still part of this bill, and I'm concerned about the Excel Center, to be quite frank about it, and that we shouldn't be, you know, supporting one facility over the other, and we've heard testimony about how that's detrimental to the entire metropolitan area and bringing revenue in. And so I'm just curious about that. I thought we were going to take care of that in this bill.
Senator Rose.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator McGuire, I haven't had a chance to take care of anything yet. Okay. This is where this bill has been for the last month or so. I think there is some amendments coming, and I think Senator Reinhart's amendment addresses some issues, and some other issues are coming. But also with me, Mr. Chair, I have Mr. Ted Mondale, and he's ready to answer any questions about the structure of the bill and the funding source.
Thank you. All right. Senator Reinhart, did you want to offer the A12 amendment? Is that
if the author is okay, or
okay. Senator Mondale
wants to testify first, I'm fine either way. Senator Rosen, Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, do you have a preference? Do you want Mr. Mondale to go, or should we do my amendment?
Chairman Senator, are you working off the
A12?
The A12.
Are you doing the A12 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, as a friendly suggestion,
yep.
I think that page 4.8, subdivision 10, if you were willing to pull that, I think a quorum of 10, a majority of 4/5 while you're trying to build a billion-dollar facility might be could cause some problems going forward. Maybe we could discuss, as this bill goes forward, a different way to get at that, but it just seems that might be a little much. Just a friendly suggestion.
Mr. Chair, I'm willing to talk with somebody over offline while forward with the hearing.
Did it pass? Possible we're missing a page here.
Yeah, we're just discovering.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm a little concerned, confused. Is it the A12-0959 that was just passed out? That is your amendment, Senator Reinhart?
That's what I have.
We're missing a page.
Okay.
I have the A12.
Mr. Chair, I think there might be a bit of confusion. The revisor's office did this amendment, and I don't know that they did all of the changing. Of the headings, so it should be the one with the date, today's date at the top. If anybody has their A12 from the last hearing, those page and lines won't match up anymore, so make sure it says the date at the top. And I do believe there is a page missing in the copies that were handed out, so we'll get some new copies made right away.
So
it makes no sense.
Well, we're waiting for copies.
It goes 1, 3, 5.
Mr. Chair, can we put this amendment aside until we get it fixed?
Yes.
I believe the quorum is probably in your original amendment.
Senator Reiner, would you like to temporarily withdraw your amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Temporarily withdraw the A12 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask for counsel's help in also moving an amendment to delete the SAC charges from this bill as well. I think it's in... Sorry, I had it. I Article 1, Section 10, Subdivision 11.
We'll give Ms. Dangle a few minutes on that, too, as long as we're here. Senator Ingebrigtsen, welcome to the committee. Okay, Senator Rosen, do you have anyone else who would like to testify for the bill? While we're waiting, we could maybe.
You know, Mr. Chair, there has been quite a few questions about with the previous bill about the charitable gaming and the electronic pull tabs and bingo devices. This bill, my bill, does not have a percentage intact. We were concentrating on the authority piece that goes through this committee. But if Tom Barrett, Mr. Barrett, and the Commissioner Franz are here to answer any questions and kind of give a review of why the assumptions that they've come to are real and reliable, and they can just give you kind of a brief little history about how they got to the revenue numbers that they have. And
if there are questions, Senator Rose, and I did accept my apology, I hope. We're not going to take public testimony. We'll just answer members' questions directly.
Okay.
I think is where we're at, because we've already had the public hearing part of the bill. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I may, Chairman, to Senator Sieben's amendment, if you were to strike a line 1026 after the period through 1028, it would achieve what Senator Sieben is seeking to do.
Ms. Stengel, did you have the Sieben amendment?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mm-hmm. On page 10, page 10, line 26, delete everything after the period. On page 10, delete lines 27 and 28.
Discussion to the Sieben oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We're still waiting for your amendment.
We're waiting for
any other additional questions from members? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions. One actually right on the part of the bill that we just amended, and that is lines 10.21 through 10.26. What is it that we're exempting them from? What's the Met Council review in the Business Subsidy Act? What exactly are those exemptions?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, there is a state law that allows for
convention centers,
cities or entities that feel they are aggrieved by a large development to be able to petition the Met Council to do a review on whether the project interferes with the systems that the Met Council oversees, roads. You remember the amphitheater about 10 years ago down in Burnsville and Bloomington? They got into a big fight about that. It was used successfully at the Mall of America, where the mall development was going to be put in place, and the traffic counts looked like it would have backed up 494 and 35 forever, and so they forced the project to build more. This project, since it already handles 65,000 seats a year and you have a light rail line coming in, it would be seen that having that in place might be used as a legal procedure to delay the project. The Twin Stadium had the same exemption, and many big projects have that exemption. So it would be our hope, and I think it's supported by the Met Council, our hope meaning the proponents of the bill, the authors of the bill, that provision stay in there.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair?
Okay, Senator Nelson.
I had one other question while we're waiting for those amendments. And I would draw your attention to page 40. I know I asked about this when this bill came before our committee several months ago, but a lot has happened since that time. And I'm referring to lines 40.9 through 40.19, and that has to do with charter limitations. And can you just bring us up to date on what's happened since you were before us last in regards to the charter limitations?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, well, I've been spending a lot of time over in the House, which, but the way the financing for the bill is set up, it does not require a waiver to the charter amendment at the city of Minneapolis. And that the state, the money goes to the state keeps the money, the state appropriates the money. The city has nothing to do with where the money goes. What this provision does is today the charter amendment disallows, and if I'm wrong, please come up, but if I may get through this, the charter basically says that you cannot spend more than $15 million on almost anything. So that's why the city has come to the legislature for sewer project, road projects, and exempted the charter, I believe, 22 times in the last 20 years. What this provision says is that for expenditures, and there's another provision there, but for expenditures for economic development, because the way this bill is set up is the city has these four taxes, and they're very tightly controlled. You can do this for that, and you can do this for that. This sort of gives the city more local control on these taxes. There's no money going to the Target Center from the state. There's no risk from the state in case there's a problem with the Target Center. But this bill, and this is part of the language, says that these dollars could go for general economic development purposes, so it's up to the city where they spend them. And if they were to put them into a large economic development project or the convention center, you can see on lines 14, 13th, and 14, 19, there's all sorts of sources that they can use dollars coming out of these four taxes, and it would not trigger the charter amendment. So that's what this language says.
Just a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before I do that, though, I'm supposed to ask testifiers to speak into the microphones. And those in the audience, please take your conversations outside the room so we can hear better. Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Mondale, just one final question on that. Do I understand it correctly that it gives the locals more flexibility in spending those funds? And then secondly, just kind of bring us up to date, those of us who have not been able to follow the Minneapolis City Council of late, what they have said in regard to this.
Chairman Mondale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator, I don't like to speak for the city. We do have the mayor here if you'd like to.
Sure, that'd be great.
Mayor Rybak, welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the tape, please?
Thank you very much. I'm R.T. Rybak. I'm the mayor of Minneapolis. The legislators, certainly the sponsor to my right and others, have asked for a expression of support from a majority of the city council. We have secured that. The majority of our city council has publicly, in writing, committed that they support the proposal that we have negotiated. To your previous question, Mr. Chair and members, Chair Mondale communicated that correctly. The proposal we have before us uses state dollars that are collected in the city and allocates them to the stadium. What it also does is allows us to take excess and use that for local economic development projects.
Thank you. You answered my question.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 16.12 of the bill, it says the state shall contribute $1.5 million each year for operating from the operating fund. Where is that money coming from?
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, all the dollars that are from the state commitment will be coming from the revenue source, which would be charitable pull tabs, electronic pull tabs, and electronic bingo.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Roebling.
Is that for operation as well as the construction and the payment of the bonds, or is there another revenue source that they'll be able to use?
Mr. Chair, I have Ms. Kathleen Lamb. She can explain that.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Kathleen Lamb on behalf of the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. Senator Roebling, that 1.5 each year is operating, and it is the state taking the city convention center taxes. And so while the line says the state is contributing, it's actually taking it from the convention center tax that is the underpinning of this bill.
Senator Roebling, any other questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair. On page 19.31, it talks about the NFL team name retained, and I was trying to follow this language in here till the end of the page. So the lease must provide that the state gets the name. So if the team ever leaves, we get to retain their name, their logo, colors, history, playing records, trophies, and memorabilia. Is that what I'm understanding?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, yes, that's correct. If they were to break the lease and leave, if they were to go out of business, that the state would retain the name of the Minnesota Vikings and some of the materials. This happened in Cleveland, and so in the sports world, this is called the Cleveland Amendment, and we believe that for the taxpayers of Minnesota, this is the right thing to do.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. I have a question on 20.13. It says that the lease must provide for an agreed-upon number of affordable tickets to the professional sporting events held at the stadium. And I have no idea what that means. I've never come to a Vikings game. I do watch them on television. But what is determined to be affordable?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, this has not been negotiated out, but it's a provision. So, you know, you'd want to see how many seat licenses might be sold. But there'll be a chunk of seats that will, the way I would see it, there'd be a chunk of seats that would be sold on game days that would be much cheaper and more affordable. So that, you know, as the prices of these seats go up, there are ways that the public who do not have, you know, are able to pay a $100 ticket, $150 ticket, there will be some seats that are cheap. I don't have the number, and there's just an agreement as we put this together that both from the Vikings and the city, is that this is something we'd want to negotiate out as we went along. But it was certainly, you know, for the governor and the People's Stadium, he wanted to make sure that there were affordable tickets in this stadium for football events.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. On that same page, starting on 20.19, it talks about Major League Soccer. And I guess I didn't know that the NFL actually had established Major League Soccer. It sounds like that's what it is. And I'm just wondering about the conditions here of how they would be allowed to play in this stadium at no extra cost. Could you explain that, please?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, this provision allows the owners of the NFL team, and today the Wills, to have a five-year right of first refusal to bring a Major League Soccer team into the arena. There would not be additional rent charged to them, but they would pay their costs. So we think that this would be a good thing, and we think for the Wills family to be putting $427 million into this, paying $13 million a year in operating costs, basically for 10 days, if they were to bring a soccer team in, we feel that that's fair and equitable. It's only for 5 years, but we think a Major League Soccer team would enhance the stadium. It would enhance its uses and would be a good thing.
Thank you.
Mr.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. I'm wondering, how many days of the year would a soccer team use in a stadium? Because it was my understanding that it would be available for a variety of uses. I'm just wondering how many days it would use.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, as professional soccer is now configured to be about 18 days. So you'd say the Vikings would have 28 days if they had a pro soccer team, as opposed to 10.
And Mr. Chair?
Senator Roebling.
And you said that was negotiated for a five-year period, or they have a five-year period to bring the team in and use the stadium under those conditions.
Chairman Mondale.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the provision says that they have a five-year, that the owner of the NFL team has a five-year right of first refusal to be able to bring a pro soccer team under these provisions. Would they not do that within 5 years, or if another owner came in and they chose not to go ahead with this, then maybe there's a negotiation with the other owners if the Wilts didn't want to take this opportunity. But Mr. Chairman, Senator, we think, and I know I speak for the city, I know I speak for the authority, I know I speak for the governor and the bill authors, we think having a pro soccer league team as an addition to this would be a great thing. I mean, it's a growing sport. It would enhance the Blaine whole National Sports Center, and we think it would be a very good thing.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also, this is a $35 million commitment by the team itself to bring in a professional soccer team. And as Mr. Mondale said, Blaine would definitely, the sports center there would definitely benefit. But also you think about these are seats that are being paid for. People are coming into town, the payroll tax from these players, and it would be a well-used facility for that market.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have other entities that might have free use of the facility? Say the State High School League has their football tournament there on an annual basis. They've always had it at the Dome. What kind of rent would they be expected to pay, or is there some opportunity for them to play there free as well?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, if I turn your attention to page 67. Oh, that's easy. The last page of the bill. And there's language that the State High School League would have a number of dates, 7 days a year for high school soccer and football tournaments at very good rates. In the bill also, and I don't have the provision, but it says this stadium shall be run similar to the kind of events and costs at the Metrodome, which is basically the way the structure of this whole package is put in place, is that the operating funds for the professional sports, especially mostly football, would subsidize the local events. So we'd have the Metrodome, which is somewhere around for, I know we leased them when my son was playing high school baseball for $400 for a game. You know, you have the rollerbladers that pay, I don't know what they pay to come in, $5 or something like that. So that there are events and prices that are very cheap that are subsidized by pro football, and that would be the standard as to setting these rents and access to the facility going forward. And that I know that's what?
Okay, Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chairman, that's on Senator Roebling. It's on page 15. Starting with line 26 through 31.
Did he call me? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Mondale, I wanted to go back to the on page 19, the public share on the sale of the team. If I am reading this correctly, the way it would work is the team was purchased for approximately $600 million. In 2005, and so then say the team was sold subsequently for $1 billion, it would be that difference of $400 million times 18%, which, if I did my math right, is $72 million. So I guess my question is this a strong enough clawback provision? Because if the team is sold soon after, it won't be enough money to pay back the public share of the debt that's owed. And so if you could just discuss more why. I know that these numbers are similar to the Twins bill, but if you could just talk more about the actual numbers, the way it will work.
Chairman Mondale.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, this bill locks the NFL franchise, we know as the Vikings, into the state of Minnesota for 30 years. It also gives 4-5 year extensions should the Vikings want them. That's the primary purpose. However, should the and this situation is very different from the Twin Stadium. I mean, the Polads bought the team for $36 million. The Wilfs bought the team for $625 million. Kind of a little difference on the base going in. But the idea is if in the short term the owners of the Vikings were to profit significantly in that, the state being a investor in this would get some money back too as well. But really the general purpose is we want the team in Minnesota for 30 to 50 years.
But, Mr. Chair and Mr. Mondale, I understand that there are other sections of the bill that ensure that the team will stay in this stadium. But my point is, can't we strengthen this language to ensure that if the team is sold for a profit, at first, the first thing that should happen is that that profit should go to pay off the public portion of the remaining debt so that not only the team is benefiting from the building a new stadium for the team, but also the public is benefiting by buying down some of the debt. Well, and I understand that it is some. It just seems kind of paltry to me if you actually flesh out the numbers.
Okay. Chairman Mondale. Was that a comment or was that a comment or question?
It was
Senator
a question.
Mr. Chairman,
Chairman Mondale.
Senator Seam, again, I may be misunderstanding you, but the language in this bill would give the team could not leave Minnesota during those 30 years.
I'm not asking about that.
We believe that, and so that was the purpose. We believe that if the current owners sell the team within this period of time, or they get the stadium deal and they sell the team, that at 18% back, that the main purpose of this bill, which is to keep a NFL franchise named the Vikings in this state for 30 years, will be accomplished. And we think an 18% of the profit from what they paid for it to what they sold it is a fair payback or a bonus to the state for their investment.
But I'm misunderstanding it. It's not 18% profit to the new owner of the team. It's only 18% of the difference of the original price they paid to the price they'd sell it for. So, again, if you just look at the numbers, if they paid $600 million for it and then they sell it for $1 billion to new owners, 18% of that is only $72 million coming back to the state, which isn't very much of the public portion that would still be due on the outstanding debt service.
Chairman Mondale, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman.
Misunderstanding it.
Senator, what? I mean, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Mondale.
Senator Sieben, nothing, if a new owner comes in, they are in the shoes of the old owner. So their commitment to rent, their commitment to all the other things that they would commit to do, this would stay in place. That's what we really care about. The state gets a bonus if the owners of the team sell and make a profit. In the instance you laid out, $72 million. Really, the purpose of this legislation, you know, we think the Wilfs have been good owners, but if there's new good owners in that stand in their shoes, we've gotten from the public side what we really want, and that's a world-class facility that provides year-round subsidized sports and civic activities for our kids and keeps our state and our metropolitan area a Class A city. So we think 18% is a good bonus that we would get as a side in case that was what happened.
Hey, Senator Sieben.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I'm just looking at it from a different angle that if the state is going to make a significant contribution to building a new stadium for the team, which I should say, you know, I support, it just seems like we could strengthen this language, the numbers in the actual bill, so that if the current owners, profit significantly, that more revenue can come back to pay off the public portion, the debt that's still outstanding on the stadium.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to just step back for a second and just to mention and clarify that any sale of the team or any movement of the team has to be approved by the NFL board. They want this team to stay here in Minnesota. That's why you had the commissioner flying in today. That's why we are working on the stadium. We have a team that's without a lease that are free agents. But once we work on this stadium and you have a first-class facility, the team will stay there. Now, whether they're sold or not, that's different, and that's just how business is. But this discussion came up in the governor and the commissioner's meeting this morning, and this is basically standard clawback provision with all the teams. It is something that has been negotiated. It's in the term sheet. You know, we talked about strengthening it, but it was clear that that would be completely different than what the other teams have going forward. But the purpose, as Chair Mondale said, is to make sure that this bill keeps the team here and keeps whoever the owner is, but keeps the team here, and that's the purpose for everybody.
Okay. Members and councils informed me we do need to adopt the committee engrossment, the CE1. So, Senator Roebling moves the adoption of this committee engrossment CE1. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. CE1 is adopted. That's just what we're working off of. Now I think we're ready to take the A-12.
We are, Mr. Chair.
0959. Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, yes, members, the A-12-0959, please disregard anything around this amendment that doesn't have a blue highlighter over the A-12-0959. Thank you, Ms. Stengel, for personally taking care of that. Members, this is the amendment that I brought the first time we heard this bill. At that time, Senator Rosen asked if I would hold on to it, and we would do a lot of work with it, which we did. It's streamlined. Again, the goal of this amendment is to, instead of creating yet another authority and yet another authority and yet another authority, to move towards a more cohesive model, a more coordinated model, for two reasons. Number one, for the public. The public generally doesn't know what authorities are. They don't know that they're out there. They don't know what powers they have. They're not very transparent. So the more of them we have, the harder it is for the public to follow. Number two, if we look to some other states, Colorado is a great example. We have one authority that owns all of the statewide assets. That's beneficial to us in terms of management. It's beneficial to the taxpayers in terms of transparency, but it's also beneficial to the venues in terms of not being pitted against each other, which is something we spent time talking about the last time we heard this bill. So this amendment does two things. It creates an overarching authority. We use the same name, the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority. It would start out, members, I would draw your attention to page 4, starting with line 4.21. It would start out by owning the stadium constructed under this chapter. It would have the ability to own any other sports facility constructed or acquired by the authority. And then kind of the important caveat is it is permissive for Target Center, for Excel, and for Target Field to at some point become a part, so that down the road, not right now, down the road, we would have a state authority that we have oversight of that manages our state sports assets, and frankly, members, gets us to a situation where we're not doing this every time we convene. We'd have professional management with funding to renew and rebuild as needed. I do just want to point out two things, and Mr. Chair, I will have a minor oral amendment. The first part of the amendment, the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Sports Facilities, members, this is what gives us the ability to have oversight of the authority. Otherwise, it's not comprised of legislators. And this is taken directly from the Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Governments that provides oversight on the Metropolitan Council. And then, members, I would call your attention to page 3 up at the top, beginning with line 3.3. This is the composition for the authority, and it's drawn from around the state And the model we use that's already in statute are the housing redevelopment authorities, regions that are around the state, because they're balanced both geographically as well as in terms of population. So since we're going to have statewide revenue at play, I think there ought to be statewide representation on the authority, and that's where those two things come from. And I'm happy to answer questions, but we did talk about this at our last hearing. So, Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, I'd like to make the oral amendment that I have.
Okay. Senator Reiner, go ahead. State your oral amendment.
Mr. Chair, on page 4, line 4.10, I would like to strike 10 and insert 8. And on line 4.12, I would like to strike everything after the period, and then strike lines 4.13, 4.14, and 4.15. And I would that oral amendment.
Senator Reiner, counsel says we need to work on that a little bit.
Mr. Chair and Senator Reinhart, we just need to keep those quotes on line 4.15.
Oh, thank you. So everything on line 4.15 except the quotation at the end.
Okay. So, counsel, would you care to read that back? And
yes, Mr. Chair. On page 4, line 10, delete 10 and insert 8. On page 4, line 12, delete everything after the period. On page 4, lines delete lines 13 and 14. And on line 15, delete everything before the quote.
Can that just be incorporated, or is that, since it's his amendment?
Or do,
okay, so Senator Reiner moves the oral amendment. Although, any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I just wanted to ask about the idea of statewide resources when I'm not sure I understand that there's money coming in from gambling operations, charitable gaming operations across the state. Is that what you mean?
Right.
Okay. Because the other ones don't really have that if they were to join this authority.
Senator Reiner.
So if we could do the oral amendment, then I'm happy to answer Senator Roebling's question.
Senator Roebling, are you ready to see the oral amendment? Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The oral amendment to the amendment is adopted. To the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Reiner.
Just to answer Senator Roebling's question, correct. On this project, we do via the statewide charitable gaming, but if we adopt sort of the framework, and that was a great word, Senator Chamberlain, thank you. It helps me think about it correctly. If we adopt that framework of having an authority that someday might incorporate all these venues, we're going to, as the legislature, we're going to have other statewide revenue at play. I mean, the model eventually would be we dedicate the revenue, they manage them. It's not up to the legislature every time one needs refreshing or rebuilding. We can instead focus on other things that we we probably should be focusing on versus professional sport. So it's not at play in this one, but it does provide the framework down the road.
Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you. Senator Reiner, could I bring you to page 1, 11, on the membership of the commission? I see that there's 4 senators that are going to be appointed by the Committee on Rules and Administration, and yet 3 senators will be appointed by the Senate Minority Leader. We usually don't split it that way when we're making appointments. We usually have so many appointed by a majority leader in the Senate and then so many appointed by the minority leader. And now you're kind of divesting it to a Committee on Rules and Administration. I was just wondering, this seems to be untraditional, to say the least. And I'm wondering if you could explain why that would be.
Senator Reiner.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Limmer, that was suggested language given to me by the revisor's office. I've got no investment in that. Couldn't tell you why they thought that was the better way to frame it.
Well, usually, Mr. Chair, a committee, when you make reference to a committee, it means that the committee chair most likely will be
recommending, and then the committee will follow the recommendations of the chair. That might represent the interest of the majority party, but I'm not sure if I spoke to whoever that majority leader would be. I'm not so sure if that majority leader would like that. And so every commission that I've ever seen has been appointed by the leaders of the respective caucuses. And I might suggest that that's what we do here.
Senator Reiner.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, thank you. I'm completely open to an oral amendment to strike Committee on Rules and Administration and insert Majority Leader.
Mr. Chair, I see that the Speaker of the House would pick four state representatives, and then the House Minority Leader would pick three. So it just goes in that same pattern. And I think I'm not sure if I have the language, and I don't know if Council's been focused on this, but I think maybe what we could do is just remove the words Committee on Rules and Administration and replace it with Majority Leader. I would make that an oral amendment, Mr. Chair.
So then you'd have three senators appointed by the Senate Minority Leader from the Majority Leader?
No.
Nope. Mr. Chair, the Majority Leader would appoint four, the Minority Leader three. In the House, the Speaker, who I would argue does represent the majority, would appoint four, and the Minority Leader would appoint three. I'm supportive of Senator Limmer's oral amendment.
Mr. Chair, while we're on this, usually on commissions that are not of a partisan nature, and I don't think we would want this to be a partisan nature, was there any reason why the majority party would have more representation on a fairly politically neutral commission? I'm not sure if I don't know what to think about that. Anybody have any ideas?
Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Limmer, I apologize. The reviser who worked with me on this, I told her she could go home. She'd been with the House all day. So there was a model that this was directly pulled from. Right now, I don't know. I'm comfortable making the change you suggest. I'm also comfortable with leaving it and having pretty clear direction to the author as they move forward to make appropriate changes so that it's in line with what we've done before.
Senator Limmer.
Well, I'm not sure what the committee would go for, but I think what we should do is say three senators from each leadership position and in the House, three state representatives from each side. I don't have any grand strategy on it. It just seems like every commission I've ever created or been a part of, we try to keep the numbers equal for that purpose and not to have any standard majority position on it. It's really not of a political nature. It's more of an administrative one.
Ms. Stengel says she can give us that result if you'd like, Senator Limmer, to offer that.
Mr. Chair, I do have one question.
Ms. Stengel.
Senator Limmer, did you want to amend Speaker of the House to also be Majority Leader or to leave it as Speaker?
I would leave it as Speaker.
Then, Mr. Chair, I do have the amendment.
Ms. Stengel.
We are looking at the A12 amendment on page 1, line 11, delete 4 and insert 3. On page 1, line 12, delete Committee on Rules and Administration and insert Majority Leader. On page 1, line 13, delete 4 and insert 3.
Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I would consider that a friendly amendment.
So do we have to vote on that? Do we vote on it? Okay, so to the amendment. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Prevails, the amendment to the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
On page 3, line 7, it talks about compensation. The authority may compensate these particular members. Does this compensation extend to the legislative members?
Senator Reiner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I'd refer you back to line 1.28. Members serve without compensation, but may be reimbursed for their reasonable expenses as members of the legislature.
And
Senator Limmer.
Senator Reinert, when it talks about the authority being authorized to compensate members, is there any limit to the compensation in this piece of legislation?
Senator Limmer, or Reinert.
Not as currently drafted, no.
Senator Limmer.
Where it says, it does say as provided in section 15.0575. I don't know what that reference is.
Mr. Chair, I don't either. I know that it, again, this is a model that the revisor's office pulled from elsewhere. Okay. So Stengel might be able to look that section up.
Mr. Chair, would counsel know that reference at 15.0575?
Mr. Chair. If you look at subdivision 3, which deals with compensation, it says members of the board may be compensated at the rate of $55 a day on board activities. So it looks like 55 is the cap.
Senator Limmer?
I have no further questions, Mr. Chair.
To the A-12 amendment, further discussion. Senator Rosen, do you have a comment on the A-12 amendment?
This is the amendment, Mr. Chair, that Senator Reinert and I talked about, and I'm acceptable to it, yes.
Okay. Senator McGuire.
I appreciate an amendment along these lines because I've been talking about having a regional authority or a regional plan for all of these sports facilities. But I do have a question for Senator Reinert about if this is an optional amendment, and I'm just wondering if he could explain why we don't make it mandatory that our existing facilities are on this authority. It's the Target Center and XL and Target Field may join. And I'm just wondering why we're not holding them as, you know, members of this. That's the point of having an authority is that we manage all of these. So if Senator Reinert could explain
Senator
that.
Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator McGuire, this is the classic bite of the apple. I would have gone further, and earlier drafts did go further, but in respectful consultation with the author as well as other stakeholders in this, this seemed to be the appropriate starting point in building the framework that we can hopefully enhance as we move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Mondale,
Mr. Chairman, Senator McGuire, I will speculate here, but after the next Twins game, my guess would be the whole team would come over here and testify against that. I don't think the Twins would like this provision at all.
Senator
so I think
Cruz,
that's why it was thought to be not mandatory.
Senator Cruz.
Well, Mr. Chairman, actually to a different point, so if there was any other discussion, I thought we were done with that.
I just wanted to say,
point.
Mr. Chair, could
Senator
I just
McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just I think I appreciate the first step, and so I support that, but I think if we are going to have a regional authority, we should have the regional sports facilities part of it. So just I'm glad it's a first step, and I hope we continue to think about that.
Senator Cruz, I think you're...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Reinert. Just one thought as I look at this, and I don't know that I'm going to make an amendment to your amendment, but just something to think of as you're moving forward. I know this is structured after the Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Government Oversight, and one of the problems that we've run into with that commission, especially with within recent years, is that they just haven't met. And I'm looking for a reason in your amendment here that would kind of force them to come together, and the closest thing I can come to, and correct me if I'm wrong, is on page 2, that subdivision 8, which says they must monitor, review, and make recommendations to the authority and the legislature for the following calendar year. I guess I'm just wondering if that's enough, if that language is strong enough to make them come together. I know sometimes if something doesn't have any teeth, any enforcement behind it, even if the word says must, well, let's be honest, sometimes it doesn't happen. So I was just wanted to make you aware of that, maybe get your thoughts on it. And
Senator Reinert.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cruz, I think that's a great point. It's not one we had discussed. I would look back on page 1 at line 1.32 and 1.33, which talks about the commission meeting at the call of the chair, and suggest that we change that to the commission shall meet quarterly, unless you think it it should meet more frequently, but quarterly seems like it would probably be good oversight and must then meet.
Mr. Chair, and that I'd defer to the author of the amendment on that, whatever your preference would be.
Senator Reinert, do you have a preference?
Another suggestion that was just offered was that commission shall meet at least semi-annually.
Yeah, okay. You can set these rates and not have to.
Mr. Chairman, and just for members, if you look at page 3.27, the legislative, as the sports commission is today, the legislative auditor would audit it as well. So you would have other legislative activity, and I can assure you, having been through one, they're very thorough. Questioning and demanding. So even if the commission didn't meet, you still get the legislature still getting the oversight from the auditor, legislative auditor.
Mr. Chair, I'd offer the oral amendment on line 1.32. Strike meets at the call of the chair and insert shall meet at least semi-annually.
Ms. Stengel, do you have that?
I do, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to read it back?
Please.
On page 1, line 32, delete meets at the call of the chair and insert shall meet at least semi-annually.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the oral amendment to the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The A120959 amendment as amended. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. To the SCS 2391. CE1. Further discussion? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rosen, the question I have is on some of the gambling resources that this bill requires. And there's talk of creating electronic pull tab type games. How do we deal with the charities now that rely on that kind of income in order to fulfill their purpose? Are we pushing them basically out of the picture, or are we sharing some of the proceeds? How does that work?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, very good question. The charities are actually very excited about this proposal. It is an expansion of a modernization of something that's already in place. And this is a trend that's going on across the nation, but it's basically a handheld electronic pull tab or electronic bingo, and you can play this bingo game with people all across the state. That's actually receiving a lot of attention. And the charities will see a significant increase on their revenues coming back to them. That amount has not been determined in this bill. The House has what they are going with forward. There's been many discussions with the department and the Charitable Gaming Control Board with the charities on this. And I will let them speak. I have Commissioner Franz and Mr. Barrett here.
Okay, Mr. Barrett.
Members, again, Tom Barrett, Director of the Gambling Control Board. As I alluded to earlier, the charitable gaming industry actually had proposed electronic format going back a few years. To the extent that it's getting additional attention because of the proposal here is, I think, what's been brought to light. And it is true. We're projecting a significant increase in the activity given the format. But one of the key elements is what remains to be seen in terms of the tax formula that's applied. Right now, under the current format with this bill, I know we've been working, or the industry reps have been working with the Department of Revenue to find that happy medium. But at the same time, if things were to go forward as is under current tax structure, there is significant revenue that would be available with this new format, available to the charities, available to the state, available to the bar owners. So it's out there. But nowhere in this bill does it require existing licensed charities to take on this electronic format. They can continue to do the paper games, play the regular old bingo as is. There's no requirement that they do that.
Mr. Chair, on that question, sir, you said there would be more revenue In a previous question I asked you earlier today, the number of sites you did not think would expand. So why is there more revenue if the sites do not increase?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer. Simply the expectation that these formats will bring new players in. It might generate additional interest in the way it's played. And it's with that those projections of that input with the product vendors that have these devices that have seen that kind of an increase in play.
So, Mr. Chair, sir, could I then extrapolate from your answer that electronic gaming is a superior way to raise money than a regular pull tab, and that there's an increase in gambling in the state of Minnesota as a result?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, to the format that's being offered, yes, we expect to see an increase. Strictly compared to the way the paper games are played now, yes, the projection is they would take in more than the way it's paid and played with paper. But we also anticipate paper's not going to go away. You'll still see the old-time pull-tab player or old-time bingo, those activities. So that's still going to be in play. But simply based on the electronic format, we think there'll be a higher interest or higher play paper.
So, Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure we know what we're getting into. If we go down this path, we are increasing the probability that Minnesotans will gamble more as a result of this new media.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate the comments, Senator Limmer. I do think that this is an option. It's an entertainment option that people have with their free dollars and where they choose to spend it. It's no different than them spending money on a game box or a different games or going to the VFW to play bingo. I mean, people have ways to spend their entertainment dollars, and I personally have never pulled a pull tab. But perhaps with electronic, I might do that at the Channel Inn down in Fairmont just to see what it's like and perhaps get on a statewide bingo game. Might be kind of fun. And so this is an option, and it does – the assumptions that have been put forward by the Revenue Department are very conservative. The representatives from the charities have said that, and they feel very confident with these numbers going forward. I feel very confident with them. The commissioner perhaps would like to state something on that, but it is just another form of entertainment, and it's an option for people to place their dollars there.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, that concept of a statewide bingo game, is that something that you might think is like a new version of a lottery where people could create a revenue stream for this project?
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Barrett.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer. As relates to the electronic link bingo, currently under current law, there was a linked bingo game that was being played. Now, it fell out of flavor simply maybe because it was the manual paper play and it always had to be timed at 8 o'clock to start. But it actually was in play at about 30 locations around Minnesota, but all on paper. So This is simply taking what was allowed under paper and moving into the electronic format. And to that point, the same comparison with the paper pull tabs. Everything was designed based on what's currently allowed in law for the paper games, prize structure, the game approvals, the game testing, all those things. It's just the electronic format for what's played in paper.
Mr. Spirit, I have a quick question. Is there, as far as a model of a state that's changed to this type of format and seen that kind of an increase, is there a model like that?
Mr. Chair, excellent question. There's no model out there currently that's mimicking what's being proposed in Minnesota. There's other similarities. There's the state of Virginia is in the midst of writing rules very similar to what we're doing here, but they're not in operation yet. State of Idaho, under the lottery authority, has electronic games, but they're like a wall mount. There's the money into the machine. So while that's a similar electronic format, it's different than what's being proposed here. And that is a key element that what's being proposed, these devices, it's not the money in the machine. It's not the slot. In fact, the bill limits. It can't mimic a slot machine and those kinds of things. It's a finite number of tickets or chances similar to what a paper game is. So back to your point, other states are working towards automating their games, but there's no model in place currently that matches what's being proposed in Minnesota, both in terms of the electronic pull tab and electronic bingo.
Thank you. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the linked bingo, I find it interesting that if you wanted to have it at an established bingo parlor, I guess I would call it, they have to have seating of at least 100. But it says that the number of electronic bingo devices is limited to no more than 6 devices in play for establishments with 200 seats or less, no more than 12 devices in play for places with 201 seats or more, and no more than 50 devices in play where bingo is the primary business. So I'm a little puzzled by that. If you can only have, I mean, it's a bingo place, but you can't give everybody who might come in and take a seat one of the devices to play. Why is it limited?
Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, another good question. This is where a little bit of back history might help. A few years ago when this format was proposed and the charities brought the bill before, there was some concern, rightfully so, by tribal representatives as far as how big could this activity. And so from that concern, there was a meeting with tribal representatives, charitable industry reps, as well as representatives from the bar industry. And it was at that gathering, that we all sat down. The board acted somewhat as the mediator, neutral, but that is where those limitations were discussed as far as how many devices would be in play at a bar with less than 200 seats, or how many devices would be in play at a bingo where the primary business is bingo. And on that point, an example was there is an offer, well, maybe limit it to 200. And yet the charities came back and says, well, we're comfortable with 50. That's how we got to the 50.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I really question whether tribal interests should dictate what is played at non-tribal facilities. And it troubles me that happens.
Mr. Eric.
Yes, and Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, trust me, the board understands that too. The mission of the board is to regulate the charitable gaming. But mindful, I think, in terms of the activity and what these devices could do, that's where, as we presented to the board, not that they have a position, but to brief the board. Could we regulate it if it was 6 or 10? Absolutely. But I think in terms of what's an appropriate number, and the thought was everybody was comfortable, charities included, in terms of the numbers that are put forth in the bill. Is that where it ends up? There's, you know, location, location, location. There are some locations with less than 200 seats that'll probably use constantly the 6 devices they have. Others that could be a big location that don't use them all. So there's the expectation is if this were to pass, there'd be some analysis by the board to see how these are played, the volume. But that's where we came back to it. But no, the board does regulate the gaming.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Just to be clear that this is not mandatory, they do not have to put this in the electronic paper the paper pull tabs are still an option, will be very viable. This is just an option for them going forward.
Mr. Chair, and I'm not questioning that part of it. I'm questioning that we're limiting how many devices they can have for the linked bingo in a bingo parlor that is non-tribal. And it sounds very limited to me if they have 200 seats and they can only have 6 devices. I just think that's not rational. And I understand that was the agreement with the tribes, and I disagree with it.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, if there is an agreement with the tribes, is that a public document that can be shared with the public?
Mr. Barrett.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer. Again, there's no public document. It was an opportunity when they expressed some concerns and not being totally against what was being proposed a couple of years ago. That's where we took the opportunity to say, what are the concerns? And so we sat down.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
And just to back up, just to kind of clarify this, we as a legislature and as the majority decided that there would be absolutely no general fund dollars to help fund the state's portion of this and no tax increases. So the revenue thoughts or what our options were is this is what we came to, and that could be agreed upon by both parties in a bipartisan way. And I do particularly agree with Senator Oebeling on this. I do. And just want to make that for the record.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure that if there was an agreement between a tribal entity that the public would know about it, but apparently there's not. It's more of a result of maybe conversation. And was that conversation, was the public invited to this discussion? Was there proper notice? Was it presented for publication so that the rest of the world could know what's going on?
Mr. Barrett, would you
yes,
like to
thank you,
that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer. And I understand your point. I guess it was a meeting of understanding. Obviously, there's a number of tribal representatives at this meeting. Not all of them really agreed on the points, but when we got done as far as the number of issues, that's what found its way in terms of the recommendation of the original bill, going back, not Senator Rosen's bill, but 2 years ago. But it was more of a courtesy meeting to gauge their concerns, knowing going forward. And this is primarily from the charitable gaming side. We found the board in play or sitting at the table merely looking out for the regulatory perspective.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chair, so what I'm kind of visualizing is that tribes had their representatives at the meeting, and as far as the people, the non-tribal citizens of Minnesota, did they have any elected officials representing those individuals in this meeting, speaking on their behalf?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, no. There was no elected officials at the meeting. I view it basically as an opportunity to craft what was going to be put into the bill, and at that point, open up the discussions on how we came about those numbers like we're doing today.
Further discussion? Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, on page 20, at the top of page 20, it talks about the stadium design, and it says that the authority and the team will strive to build a stadium that is environmentally and energy efficient, and we'll make an effort to build a stadium that's eligible to receive the LEED certification. I think that language could be stronger, and so I would hope that you would support on lines 20.1 striking the word strive to. And then I'd also like to discuss with you maybe after this hearing, as we move forward, amending out the language to the extent feasible for the language on line 20.6. And my rationale for doing this is that I think that architecturally things have progressed enough to build an energy efficient and environmentally friendly stadium. I'm willing to leave in the part that says that the authority should make an effort to get it LEED certified, because I understand from the building the ballpark that can add some additional cost. But I think that we need to send a stronger statement that this design of the stadium should be environmentally efficient and energy efficient. And so I'd hope that you would support that, on lines 20.1, striking strive to. So instead it would read, the authority and the NFL team will build a stadium that is environmentally and energy efficient.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sieben, I agree with you. I think that's good. As the chair of the Energy Committee, I always like to see something that's built that's energy efficient. I do agree with you, too, that things have advanced. I believe the target field was LEED certified, and so, yes. And I would agree to that amendment.
So would you like to read the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 20, line 1, delete strike 2.
Strike 2.
The oral amendment to the amendment, or to the oral amendment. All those in favor, or discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kaler.
First, a question. On page 20.16, stadium builders licenses. Could you clarify what that means, what that is, and how that would work for the authority? Is that a money-making thing?
Mr. Chairman, Senator,
Chairman,
that's a different way of saying personal seat licenses, and it would be part of a package that the authority, with the team as its marketing directors, would sell season tickets and sell a license to purchase that seat. It's a standard provision in all NFL packages, and it is something that the Vikings have not decided yet to do, but in almost all of the stadium deals in recent memory, they've had that ability to do that.
Mr. Chair, can I follow up? And so if they're – so the Vikings are the ones that would make the decision as to whether or not to do seat licensures?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, because it would be a complicated discussion. Maybe you have to – you get more money up front and drop the price of the seat. Maybe, you know, it's a – we wanted the team that are marketing experts to be able to market their product in that building. So,
and, Mr. Chair, and then to – so that money goes directly where into the – to the authority? Does it go to pay off the bonds or
– Mr. Chairman, that – Senator, that goes to the team. That would be no different.
It says the authority.
It's an appendage of a ticket sale. So it's, I think, the way to look at it.
Mr. Chair, it's the language says the authority shall own, retain the exclusive right to the stadium builder's licenses in the stadium. That means the sports authority, doesn't it?
Mr. Chairman, the reason that that is written like that is to for the tax consequences of selling the personal seat licenses.
Could you explain that a little?
Welcome to the committees. Can you state your name for the tape, please?
My name is Craig Skime. I'm with CSL International, and I am a consultant with the Sports Facilities Commission. Mr. Chair and Senator, the question on builder seat license or personal seat license, if you will, a couple of things about them is, as Chairman Mondale expressed, they're really an extension of the season ticket package. When you sell that, you sell it to people who are buying their season ticket. And so what you're doing is you're taking the sale of that seat for Vikings games and you're putting an upfront portion to it and then an ongoing, obvious season ticket portion. And as long as you – or traditionally, as long as you continue to pay your season ticket, you maintain that seat and you do not pay that license again. So it's typically a one-time fee. One of the options for that fee and the one that's used for in almost all markets is to assist in the building of the facility. So if the authority has that right and the authority retains the right for those monies can go into the building in a more tax advantageous way than if they were just retained by the team. But the pledge for these PSLs is really to be part of the contribution for the construction of the stadium.
Mr. Chair, is that the team's contribution or is that the taxpayer's contribution? Because it's the authority is representing the taxpayers, right?
Chairman and Senator, the authority has the right, so it's the vehicle as it goes through the authority, but the team is actually the marketing agent and selling those as a part of their ticket package. And in this case, it is part of, and in almost all cases in the NFL, it is part of the team contribution. You often hear about the contributions of teams in San Francisco and New York and Dallas, and these are all the vehicles that were used as a part of team contributions in those markets as well.
Mr. Chair, I had a couple other things. Can I offer an amendment now? Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A22 amendment. One of my concerns, Senator, Commissioner Mondale and Senator Rosen, has been that it seems that the negotiations have resulted in the team having all the getting all the revenue that's coming in, or any options on the revenue that's coming into the stadium for not just the their own games, but for everything else, to help pay their portion of the stadium, whereas the business community has been saying they want this and they need it for recruitment, et cetera. And if they buy a suite, they are not paying. Nobody's help. None of this building seems to be helping pay the taxpayers' portion of the stadium. And so my concerns are with that. The amendment I have has to do with a box seat surcharge. Business community says that they're going to support this team and this stadium by buying the box seats. I would just like, until the bonds are paid off, that we have a 10% surcharge on that. And that way we have some contribution to them. The bonds get paid off quicker. The team can get the money faster back, the rates back faster. But we have a funding source that's coming from the folks that are actually benefiting from the stadium, rather than a funding source from the guy that's playing pool tabs in outstate Minnesota and may never ever get to sit in a seat in the stadium. Those folks that are sitting there ought to be helping the taxpayers pay for the stadium. So that's my amendment kind of addresses that, and I'm interested in trying to see what kind of response I can get. I think it's just time to start that discussion about, you know, who's actually footing the taxpayers' bill on this, and make sure that we have those folks that are benefiting from the state. One of my concerns is the folks that can make money off the stadium, that are benefiting from the stadium, and the Vikings being here are also helping contribute from to the taxpayers' portion of this. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, did you?
Yes, Chair Mondale, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, what you're proposing is raising $2.3 million a year, which is a pretty big mm-hmm. number, because if you look at net present value multiplied by 25, all of the non-Vikings revenue, except for maybe soccer, goes back to the state and to the authority to cover the. So your statement that all this money that would come into the facility, et cetera, just goes to the team. In fact, for the 355 days or 325 days, all that revenue goes back to the state authority. So the Vikings only get the revenue for their games. So you're looking at a pretty big number here.
The Senator, Commissioner Mondale, this is a question for clarification. When a company buys the suites, do they buy them just for the Vikings games, or do they buy them for more than that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it would be just for the Vikings games.
Ridiculous.
So this is a proposal. Could you get into a little more detail on the kind of revenue that we could expect to raise from the non-Vikings stadiums that would actually go to pay off the bonds? That's the part that I'm concerned about. One of the things is we're not getting anything from those folks that are attending Vikings games to pay off the bonds, because that's all being used up by the Vikings' share of the construction cost.
Mr. Chairman,
is my understanding.
Now,
that's
Senator,
I'm looking for clarification.
The way this is constructed, we would, some years are better, some years
right.
are worse, but we would say an average of about $2 million a year that the authority would keep for the other events that are profitable. Obviously, a lot of that money is going to go to subsidize high school baseball, which is mm-hmm. highly unprofitable. So it would be about $2 million a year that the state would take in for events that were not football-related. Profit. So, you know, revenue and operating costs, so there'd be that profit coming in. So the state does get a significant amount of money for the non-football events.
Mr. Chair, so, but on the football events, on the Vikings, how much of the revenue that comes in for those football events does the taxpayer get to pay off the bonds? And how, it seems to me that it's all skewed against the taxpayer and helps the Vikings pay their share of the construction costs and operating.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it depends how you look at it. If over the over the period that these bonds are let, the state brings in $450 million more dollars than it puts out, as with income taxes coming back to the state. We think that's a good thing. That's a $140 million net present value figure off the $398. So the state makes a significant profit because of the nature of NFL football, because you have so many, it's so successful, you have so many players that make so much money. Make no doubt about it, the state portion of this makes a significant profit on this. The extra revenue coming in, as we have it structured, goes to help subsidize the other youth sports and to pay for the other facilities within it. So it goes to operating costs, which are something you need to make sure you have right, or you'll have a target center situation on your hands.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kalish.
Commissioner Mondale, the money that's going into the state is to the general fund, and it's not being used to pay off the bonds for this stadium. So even though the revenue is coming in because the Vikings are paying payroll taxes, it's still not going to help pay off the bonds in this stadium. Is that not accurate?
Chairman, Senator, that's correct. The way this bill is structured is that the money to pay off the state bonds is coming from the charitable gaming proceeds. It is also true that the state will make $450 million more in cash than it puts out for the bonding. So this is a profitable venture over time for the state if you just look at the income taxes of the team and the sales taxes that happen only within the building. So that's not what happens at Hubert's or what happens at the hotels. It's in the building and with the team.
Mr. Chair, I still think that we need to try to collect some of this revenue, and so I'm going to ask that we pass this amendment.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Kalish, I appreciate the sentiment and what you're trying to do with this amendment, but I think I'd speak against it, in terms of somebody that tries to sell something every day themselves to make a living apart from this building. I would venture to say I think the Vikings are already maximizing the sales price of those boxes, and by simply adding 10% to that cost, I would argue probably takes more people out of that market. I understand your concern about trying to raise those dollars, but in my view, the way this deal is structured right now, it appears to be tapping the Vikings for the dollars to help fund it, and adding 10% would just take that many more of those people that purchase those boxes out of that market, and in my mind, take that funding out of whack.
Mr. Chair, response.
One
of the issues I have with it is that most of these boxes are purchased by corporations. And those corporations then take what they pay for the box, write them off in taxes as being a business expense. So, they're using the poor sucker from some part outstate doing pull tabs that'll never be able to afford a seat in this stadium. He's subsidizing the guy sitting in the box, and those guys are not only not paying any taxes to help pay for the bonding on this stadium, but they're also able to write off those seats as part of their corporate expenses. And so how in the world can we, let's tap the people that are using the stadium, that are benefiting the most from the stadium. The seats cost taxpayers about, $8,000 a seat. And the folks, it's primarily the reason we need to do this stadium is for the Vikings primarily. They're profiting from it. Yeah, maybe their profits and their ability to pay back is a little bit slower with this amendment, but at least we're tapping those folks that are actually benefiting from the stadium and not just the poor guy that's having a beer and enjoying some time with his family.
Okay, Senator Chamberlain.
That point. I didn't move it. This is a rare event. I don't think I've ever agreed with Mr. Kalish.
Oh, Senator Chamberlain, we have a couple of times.
anywhere, even on soda choices. But I would have to just briefly. That's kind of the point we're getting at here is, who pays for a stadium. It's not a matter of who builds it or should it get built, but who pays for it. I think Senator Kalish is just looking for a little equity here.
Further discussions? Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Mondale, maybe I misunderstood you, but I thought you said that the suites are not used when there are non-Vikings games. They're not available to the suite owners for non-Vikings games.
Chair Mondale.
Mr. Chairman, the way this is structured is the Vikings have access to the facility and all the marketing and everything for the Vikings games. They also have the right to bring in a soccer team. But any other event that comes in, whether it's U2 or anything else, you know, that money goes to the authority, goes to the state.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, perhaps you should think about amending it to say that a 10% surcharge is imposed on the sale or rental box seats for Vikings games at the stadium, to clarify that when the Vikings go to market their how much a suite will cost to sell, it's very clear that this is a 10% surcharge on that price that the individual or business is paying to rent the suite. So whatever, if it's, I don't know what they cost, $5,000, then this would be a 10% surcharge on top of that that suite price only. And maybe then that would make it more clear where the money is being generated. It may not generate quite as much money then, but I think that your point here is a good one, that the business community has certainly been instrumental in helping move this legislation forward, and it's not I don't think a 10% surcharge is an unreasonable cost to ask people who can afford to pay I'm sure some of them will cost much more than that. 10% surcharge is not unreasonable lift for them to do to help the public pay off the debt service sooner.
Mr. Chair, I would appreciate Ms. Dangle's help and crafting it that way. I'm not sure if it takes more than, but I'd consider that a friendly oral amendment, if you can help.
Mr. Chairman.
Hey, Ms. Dangle. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, over here.
Senator Steve.
No, Rosen.
Sorry.
We look alike. We also have a suggestion, perhaps. Even though I'm not particularly crazy about this amendment, and it is something that was entertained if there is a need for a backup source or a blink on something. We have talked about that. But perhaps, Senator Kielash, if you would take out the box seats and just leave the suites in there, I think that would be appropriate and gear it towards just the Vikings games. I think that would be because then we are – basically taxing the common.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes, as a matter of fact, I had another version where I had pulled the box seats out in the past, so we could fix that. So I did intend it to just be on the suites. Thank you, Senator Rosen, for pointing that out.
Ms. Dangle, did you have that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. On line 5, delete box seats and after suites, insert for NFL team games and events.
Is that your intent, Senator?
Yes, it is. Does that cover it all? Okay. I'd offer that as an oral amendment.
You also need to amend the title. I'm sorry. You need to make another amendment.
Go ahead, Ms. Stanley.
I apologize, Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash. The amendment would be on line 4. To delete box seats and then on line 5, delete box seats and after suites, insert for NFL team games and events.
Perfect.
Discussion.
Thank you, Ms. Stengel. Move that.
Okay. See none. All those in favor of the oral amendment to the A22 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The A22 amendment. Further discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A22 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment, A22 amendment, is adopted. Senator Kielash.
I have the A21 amendment. I think it's a good time for it.
Sure.
passing it out.
Thank you.
Does everyone have the A21 amendment? Your A21 amendment, Senator Kielash. Okay, see no discussion.
Senator Rosen's reaction to my amendment seems to be positive, so, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen, do you have a positive reaction?
Oh, I'm just laughing.
Mr. Chairman, this creates an urgency to pass this bill.
Mr. Chair, for the...
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, once again, those folks that benefit most from having a stadium here, and I just think that this is just a minor little charge for most of the but this reads the Sports Information Dispersal Tax, or the SID tax. It's Subdivision 1, Media Access Pass. Any media organization wishing to cover athletic events hosted at the stadium will be required to purchase a Media Access Pass, cost of $100 per person. Passes for any person over the age of 90 who has been inducted into a Sports Hall of Fame will be required to additional $100,000 surcharge to cover the food consumption, napkins, earplugs for other media members. And the proceeds of this shall go to the University of Minnesota Foundation. 50% of those funds go to the School of Journalism to be used on classes focusing on ethical and respectful reporting on legislation, legislators, and elected officials, and the remaining 50% shall go be donated to the University of Women's Athletic Program, and I would appreciate support for this bill.
Discussion to the A21 amendment.
Roll call.
Further discussion.
Is this a second agreement?
Mr. Chair, second time I'll agree with Senator Kielash.
Wow.
Mr. Chair?
Okay.
Historical.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Sid Hartman's in the room. We can hear him justify.
Some of us don't care.
Okay, to the amendment. A roll call has been requested.
I withdraw the roll call.
The roll call, Senator Limmer withdraws his request for a roll call.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I know it's in good humor. I just want to point out that freedom of the press is usually free.
Okay, all those in favor of the A21 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The motion does not prevail.
Oh. Nice try, though.
Good try.
We need to lighten it up a little bit here.
Senator Cruz.
Good job.
Senator or Chair Mondale.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, and Senator, I will estimate, and I'm remiss in not being able to completely do that because it's a very specifically drawn line. But it's generally the downtown core, surrounded by 94 on one area, the Metrodome area on the other. The riverfront, and then roughly the convention center. It's within that block of the core of downtown Minneapolis. Mr. Chair and Senator, it's roughly 8% of the city.
Okay. Well, I'm actually, Mr. Chairman, and Mayor Rybak, I'm glad you came up because I was actually going to ask you to come up. my concern for this, Senator Olson, I'm not going to offer any amendments or do anything here, but I do want to express some concerns. I'm a restaurant guy. I worked in restaurants for 16 years. I've run restaurants for 7 of those 16 years. And I have to be honest, we here in Minnesota do not treat our restaurant and hospitality industry very kindly. The restaurant industry is one of the only industry that isn't allowed to write off capital investments when they go out and they purchase a new oven or some of those large capital expenditures. We've done smoking bans. We've done minimum wage increases. I know in particular in your city of Minneapolis, there are some pretty hefty health inspection fees, both to the back of the house and the front of the house. You guys kind of separate them out there. The kitchen area and also your bar area there. I'm not necessarily even convinced that this is going to help you raise revenue for this at all. And I understand that right now in particular that this is mostly capped out at the 3%, and this is just an extension of that. But my concern is this. As this economic climate for our hospitality industry doesn't improve, we are losing restaurants, and I'm sure you're very well aware of that, Mayor. So I guess my question to you is, do you have a plan in place to help that hospitality industry in your city? I mean, we're increasing taxes on them here, and I know the lodging tax is just a shade under 3% right now. This legislation would give you permission, your city council permission, to raise that up to the maximum of the 3%. Do you have a plan in place? How are we going to protect these restaurants and hotels?
Mayor Ryback.
Mr. Chair and Senator, we do have a plan in place, and it's called passing this bill. What this bill does is it does not increase the taxes on our restaurants. It does lower their property taxes. It does make a $1 billion investment in the hospitality industry, which draws conventioners to the city, which fills the bars and the restaurants and others. What this does also do is allow us to attract and compete for events that used to fill the bars and restaurants and don't currently. Example, the Final Four, which was an absolute godsend to our restaurants and bars. We aren't competitive anymore because we don't have the facility. Now we will be. In addition, the improvements in Target Center will certainly improve our ability in a region to be able to attract events that are not coming here as well. And Mr. Chair and Senator, you also, I think, and we share a value on supporting restaurants. I've worked in them, and I work with them quite a bit. That's one of the values I brought as mayor, and that's one of the reasons why we dramatically reshaped our regulatory climate, significantly decreasing the amount of time it took to open a restaurant, including the one I was at today at 26 and Nicollet, which is now one of three new restaurants at that corner. Largely, what's happening in our city is while there are restaurants that close, there are more that are opening. It's a very exciting and dynamic situation for restaurants, but only if we continue to make these tough, important investments in the hospitality industry. The best thing for a restaurant is to pass this bill.
Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chairman, just a real quick follow-up, and I appreciate the dialogue, and I'm glad we share that interest in that hospitality industry. I think where we differ, though, is that philosophy on how do you invest in that industry. I look at what we've been able to do here at the state legislature with our budget deficit and turning that into a surplus. I would humbly argue that we have done that by eliminating taxes, eliminating some of these constraints, doing what we can to encourage more businesses to come in. I think, you know, what you would say is investment, I would argue is probably short term. If you're looking for a long term help, I would only say, you know, trying to get to a point where we can limit or decrease some of these fees and taxes on this industry is absolutely critical.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I believe we share values. We're in violent agreement. One of the motivations I have behind being involved in this project in the first place was to lower property taxes in my city. This does because of the our ability to address long-term debt on Target Center, which is currently paid for by property taxpayers, including these restaurants and bars. This will lower their property taxes. This will not increase their hospitality taxes. The hospitality taxes will stay in place. They will continue from 2020 till 2045, but in those later years, they will be matched by, we believe, dramatically higher income from making a $1 billion investment in hospitality. And, Mr. Chair and Senator, I'm extremely excited to hear you talk this way. This is sort of work I do, and offline, I'd love to talk more about what you think we should be doing because, frankly, we've done an awful lot to not only reform the city's budget and regulatory climate, but to work with ours. But I'd love to hear more.
Senator Cruz.
Well, and Mr. Chairman and Mayor, I would appreciate that opportunity as well, and I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to hook up and do that. My last thought that I would like to leave you with is what you're talking, the ability to go and watch a football game at this new stadium, which is what's required, or I know it's a multi-use facility, and I understand that we're not just talking about a handful of games here, that it's there's going to be stuff going on there. In order for our constituency to be able to utilize this, they are going to have excess income. They are going to have good-paying jobs in order to do this. And if we don't address what's going on in our economy first and make sure that we have a very healthy job market and a very low unemployment rate, it's great. We can build this new facility, but folks won't have the money to spend. And that's my concern, is that that's when the hospitality industry is going to lose out.
And Mr. Chair and Senator, again, I think we're in very strong agreement. Remember that the hospitality industry in this region has a $1 billion payroll. And that payroll I understand very well because I spend a lot of time with people who work in restaurants, who make the beds in the hotels, and they're the ones who overwhelmingly are telling us to take this action. The second area that I think we have a real challenge with in unemployment in the state is the construction industry. If you really look at unemployment in the state, you see this arc that especially goes over the northern suburbs. There are a lot of things responsible, but all these folks sitting in the back of the room representing the construction trades recognize that that's because we have a construction crisis going on in this state, and 7,500 of them at the very least will be put to work by this project, and those are part of the economic incentives. But the other part is something that's pretty free to us. And I shouldn't say free. I should say it's low-hanging fruit as far as competing with other places and not with each other. And that's the ability to attract conventions. And part of this will solidify our funding for conventions and convention marketing, which generally produces far more revenue for the state than the city, but certainly for the hospitality industry. Our hotels have felt so strongly about this that they were willing to impose an additional tax on themselves, which is not in this proposal. And this, Mr. Chair and Senator, is all about jobs. We share that value. A final point, Mr. Chair, if any of the members want, I do now have a map of that district. It is similar to what I represented in my verbal comments.
And Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could just make a couple comments, and I appreciate your line of questioning, Senator Cruz. I think it's very good, and I hopefully understand there is no tax increases in it, just an extension of the already existing taxes that has full agreement from the hospitality group that serves this area. They are here ready to testify in support. The other thing I want to say, too, is it's not necessarily
– thank you –
about the person that goes to the game day. Of course, that's very, very important. But keeping the stadium, keeping the team here, because they do not have a lease and they are free agents, is very important to anybody that listens to them on a Sunday afternoon. You go into a nursing home, the Vikings are on. You go down to a sports bar or a restaurant anywhere in the state. They have to hire extra people for that day. The amount of revenue that's generated on a game day is tremendous. So it's just not just about that stadium on that game day. It's about the feel, the vibes in the state when the Vikings are playing.
Hey, Senator Harrington. Do you have an amendment?
Page 39 starts in 38.
The 825 amendment?
At
39. Senator Harrington moves the A25 amendment. Does everyone have the amendment?
Yes.
Senator Harrington.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Senator Rosen for having extensive conversations with me early on in the process of drafting this bill. There was some concern expressed by the City of St. Paul and our mayor about a shift in the balance of equity in terms of how our two major entertainment venues were being treated. And in her original bill, there was a funding source that was set up that would have shifted that competitive advantage to Minneapolis. I appreciate her willingness to discuss with me ways of creating parity to keep that balance between the Twin Cities really much more of a twin. But in the interim, as we have not come up with a way of doing that, the A25 amendment keeps the playing field as it currently is with funding, if it's going to go to anything, going to the Viking Stadium, but not going to Target Center or to the XL. So the A25 essentially keeps the convention center money in Minneapolis. It doesn't take any money away from them, but it doesn't give them the authority to move it to the Target Center or other projects.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to thank Senator Harrington. He's been a very active part of the bipartisan working group that we've had in place for a very long time, and he has expressed his concern over this issue of the dueling cities and these sports arenas. And this is a very critical part to Minneapolis's deal. I understand that. I have made a personal commitment to Senator Harrington and to the delegation of St. Paul and Ramsey County to deal with this going forward. We are in front of this committee again to deal with the whole bill, but specifically the authority piece. And I think we dealt a little bit with Senator Reinhart's amendment to deal with this overall arching approach. Again, for the record, though, I would like to tell Senator Harrington that we will try to make it as equitable as possible for XL going forward. With that, I don't know if the mayor of Minneapolis has a few comments that he'd like to say. Are you?
Yeah. Mayor Ryback.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Senator. Our goal from the beginning, in fact, far before the beginning of this discussion, has been to work with XL on strategies to make sure both arenas succeed. It's my very, very strong belief, and I believe the facts will demonstrate it, that the status quo is not an option for either Minneapolis or St. Paul. I believe that any opportunity open to Minneapolis should be extended to St. Paul. I frankly am a bit frustrated at having not heard any strong proposals on what is the solution at XL, but I would be very open to supporting them, just as I support, for instance, the idea that there should be a Saints stadium in downtown St. Paul, even though there's a baseball stadium in Minneapolis. So I am open to options and discussions on this. I do want to remind people that I've been very clear from the beginning that the only way that we can pass this on our end is with the package that we brought forward. But I also believe that the senator has been leading us through this, and I'm open to any kind of dialogue as we move forward.
Senator Harrington, do you have any?
I move the bill, or move the amendment.
Okay, Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, I'm agreeing a lot with my other colleagues. Again, I support this idea. We want to – it's a big concern of equity between the two cities, and this certainly tips the balance, and I think we would be able to find some way to continue this project. You'd still have the tax revenue to shift to build to help fund the stadium project. It just prevents that Target piece from being in it, unless and until we have an equitable agreement for it.
No discussion, seeing none. All those in favor of the A25 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. No. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Mayor Ryback a couple more questions. Mayor Ryback,
I believe when you first made a presentation to the legislature about getting Minneapolis involved in this competition, let's say, for the stadium, you had made mention that we could use an existing cash flow that your city had, the convention center tax authority, I believe, and that one could build the stadium at about $150 million less than other sites. Is that offer at this site still available, or is that off the table from Minneapolis?
Mayor Ryback.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I may not be exactly following this. As I understand it, first off, as to the site that I believe has been the least expensive by virtue of the different studies done by others is the Metrodome site. And so that's where it's being built. We have been able, I think, in a very wise way to use part of the existing infrastructure, all of the existing infrastructure and part of the stadium in reconstruction. I think that saved dollars. Where that is on estimates with other sites at this point, frankly, I don't think I could project. I'm quite clear it's still less expensive. Mr. Chair and Senator, could you repeat the first part of it and make sure I'm
wasn't,
tracking?
Yes, Mayor. Wasn't there a reference to using apparently there's a tax that is being charged in order to pay for the convention center? The convention center has long been constructed. The tax is still in existence. I'm not sure if it's paid off the convention center, but the tax certainly is remaining. Are we using any part of that cash flow in the construction or payment for this new stadium in Minneapolis?
Mr. Chair and Senator, my apologies. Let me do a better job of responding to that. The convention center is paid for with the hospitality taxes that we have talked about for some time. They're allocated to the bonds of that until 2020. After 2020, the strategy is for us to essentially put them in a pool with the state's contribution for this. And that will allow us to continue to have funding for the convention center ongoing, because there are costs associated, even after the bonds are paid off, to run a building of that size and market it as well. It will also allow us to have the state use the share for the Viking Stadium, and then have an element for local economic development that we have been discussing. So all of that would be possible. It is very important, however, to recognize that I spent some time in a House committee where folks were saying, let's just simply take the hospitality taxes from Minneapolis. If that was done, that would undercut the funding for the operation and the marketing of a convention center that is an absolute cash cow for the state of Minnesota, and that is no longer on the table. So the germ of an idea I talked about back at that point, Mr. Chair and Senator, is the backbone of the funding strategy we have now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair, I think we've made some progress in improving the equity of this bill in different aspects, and I think Senator Metzen's bill has pieces of it that are worthy as well. But, you know, as I said earlier, the issue here is, for me anyway, and for all of us, is not whether a stadium gets built. It's a matter of who pays for it and how it gets paid for. It's my estimation that the governor simply took the first offer, and we're just now in the process of negotiating that. It's my hope that we can continue those efforts and find some rational, fair solution. As I said, Senator Metzen's bill, I think, goes that way. The economic argument is for these publicly funded stadiums is that issue has been settled for some time. They're just not a net economic engine for the state. They certainly are beneficial in some ways, but as a net economic engine, present value issues, we had a discussion about that before. It just doesn't come out right. Financially, gaming, still a lot of questions about it. Projections, it's subject to change, recessions, competition. Ohio's worried about Indiana. To lose some of theirs. Wisconsin's taken a hit. these things are problematic. Minneapolis, all due respect, Mr. Mayor, I love the city, I've lived there for many years, but from being up here on the Hill for just 2 years, I've experienced that, from my experience, that the fine city of Minneapolis is under perpetual financial strain. And my concern is that the obligations you have, the convention center, the Target Center, and then to take on this big project with the stadium could be troublesome, too, and that has to be ironed out, and we have to understand that a little bit better. The last piece of this is that there are other priorities with the state. We want a stadium. We want the Vikings to stay here. We want a deal. There are priorities. I have bring pictures. I'm taking a play, something out of my colleague's playbook here. Joe, Cassie, and Barbara, they're all disabled, living in group homes. We can spend the money one place, or we can spend it somewhere else. It's a choice we make, and the legislature will make that choice in the coming weeks. Lastly, I think many of us up here are simply trying to represent the wishes of a good number of Minnesotans. You mentioned a poll earlier, Senator Rosen, the Mason-Dixon poll. They have a Survey USA poll from February 2012 that says 68% of people say it should be privately funded, should not be publicly funded, and that only 28% say that they need a new stadium. For me, that last part is up to the Vikings whether they need a new stadium, but that's the Survey USA poll. So, again, I think some progress has been made, but there's more to do, and I would we can get there. Hope you're still open to some of those discussions, and we can move forward from here. Thank you.
Hey, Senator Peterson. Or further discussion. Senator Nelson.
I just wanted to thank Senator Rosen for the long amount of time and study it's taken to bring this bill this far. And I'm hopeful that we can get it out of committee today and get it to another committee where I would really like to hear more about the financing options. I know we've touched on that a little bit today, but I think it'd be important to get a further look into that. And that would be my hope, that we can get it to one of those committees to give it a greater look on the tax and financing side.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rosen, we received some testimony today that the gambling portion may increase gambling in the state of Minnesota. Maybe it's as a result of just an electronic game being played. I know that I've been in other states where I've watched people play, and it gets to be rather repetitive and almost to the point of catatonic with some people. And they put a credit card in. Credit cards being racked up at 24 to 29% rate of interest, and people are using credit cards. I am assuming there's going to be some kind of thing like that in these games. No. But needless to say, whenever we as a state have increased any type of gambling, we try to be attentive to the problem gambler. Is there any portion of that revenue stream that would be dedicated to problem gambling and any type of treatment program that, at least if we're going to go down this path, that there might be a revenue stream for that type of expense?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, we are looking for that language, and unfortunately I can't put my finger on it right now, but there is language, absolutely, to deal with that increased right. Attention on that and revenue, absolutely.
Okay.
That's true.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Green.
Mr. Chairman, members, page 63.
Come on,
.22, section 40.
What line, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator. 63, 22, section 40. And those are the dollars appropriated to the Gambling Control Board, but there's also, if you go further down, 6332, there's the National Council on Problem Gambling, so there is dollars that would be appropriated into dealing with problem gambling in this. Right. But I'm not sure exactly what the number is and how it flows out, but it was definitely something that a number of the bipartisan working group were very insistent be in the bill.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate File 2391 as amended to the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee.
It's your request. Roll call, please.
Senator Cruz. Senator Peterson moves that Senate File 2391 be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development or Economic Growth without recommendation. Roll call has been requested.
Mr. Chair, I thought he recommended to pass. Without recommendations?
To pass. Mr. Chair, without recommendation is fine.
Without recommendation. Clerk will take the roll.
Chamberlain.
No.
Eaton.
Pass.
Harrington.
Yes.
Kielash.
Yes.
Cruz.
No.
Limmer.
No.
McGuire.
No.
Nelson.
Yes.
Peterson.
Yes.
Reinert.
Yes.
Roebling.
Yes.
Sieben.
Yes.
Vandeveer.
No.
Wolf.
No.
Recall the pass.
Okay, that's what I thought. Eaton.
Yes.
There being 8 ayes and 6 nays, the motion does prevail.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Rosen.
No, Joy, no, we can.
There being no further business before this committee, meeting is adjourned.